from the Super Digital Studio, deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio. This is the Rick Emerson Show.
Why, hello. The only thing missing is like a little ka-ching sound effect at the end of that. We'll add that next.
Okay, good.
Okay. I didn't know that it was the right one. I thought it was the wrong one.
No, I totally blew it yesterday. I just remembered that, too.
Yeah.
I ended a minute early. I can't believe it. I don't know.
Why is my karma pouring leather shoes? Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson Show. It's something. It's throwing me off because we had Max's voice there at the beginning. It sounds like we're coming back from a break. Except we're not. It's a 20-hour break that we're coming back from. It's 2 minutes and 18 seconds after the hour of 11 of this month of April of the year of our Lord 2007. Thank you for coming by and making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for coming along and making it part of your listening day. We appreciate your presence and your patronage. It is Tuesday. Welcome to Day 12. If you would like to be part of our broadcast today in whatever way, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. And you know what? And speaking of the sponsorship, which we have there. Pardon me. I mean, there's a rotating sponsorship at the studio. I believe this week it is the Super Digital Studio. Is that the one that just played? Yes, it is. The Super Digital Studio, deep within the CBS Broadcasting Multiplex. Deep underground from the Columbia Broadcasting System's fortress. We have this whole plan to sponsor all of Scotty J's body at the listener party. Like a goldenpalace.com kind of a thing.
That's creepy.
What's that?
Are we going to get the Rick Emerson Show tattooed on his forehead?
His spleen. Well, we were gonna do a whole thing. I swear to God, this is what we were going to do at the listener party, and it didn't really come together. But it was like that thing when you used to go to the butcher.
No,
I wasn't even... I caught myself off guard there. When you go to the butcher...
I barely knew her.
I didn't even do the setup that time. Butcher... We were going to do, it's like you used to go to the meat market, and they would have that whole chart on the wall that showed like a cow, and then it would be broke. Hello. Did that just end by
itself?
That just
stopped, and it has 50 seconds left.
Well, that's almost certainly not my fault.
Not mine.
It's my fault.
Vehicle?
I'll fix it later.
Okay.
Let's pretend it didn't happen. The point is, you would go to the butcher shop, and there would be this diagram of a cow or whatever it was you were eating on the wall, and it would be, and the different sections of the cow would be labeled. I think Wile E. Coyote did this later on with the Roadrunner in one of those Roadrunner with one of those episodes. There were those weird episodes of the Roadrunner cartoons where he would talk. I don't know if I'm the only one who remembers that. It's like there. Tim is giving me the that's not the real McGruff look. I can see it on your face. Do you realize I went from the opening of the show to Scotty at the listener party to the butcher shop to the Roadrunner to Tim giving me the McGruff look? Right there, that's the Rick Emerson Show in a nutshell. That's time spent listening is what that is. Right there. I got to listen to see how he works his way back. There were like three different episodes of the Roadrunner cartoon where Wile E. Coyote would speak. It was very, very infrequently. I would say out of all of those Roadrunner cartoons, and let me just say this, by the way, while we're talking about Roadrunner cartoons, it continues to irritate and vex me that there is no DVD collection of Roadrunner cartoons. Now, you can get the Looney Tunes Gold Collection, which is what I have on DVD because I am an adolescent, because I tread water in a sea of retarded childhood.
My dad has all of those.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
See, it's great. It's fantastic. But what they don't have is they don't have a box set of just the Roadrunner episodes, which I would absolutely buy. I would buy that in a heartbeat. Anyway, there were these episodes where Wile E. Coyote would talk, and he would pull down this chart of the Roadrunner, and he would show how different sections of the Roadrunner tasted like different foods. I see your skeptical look. I can see the disbelieving gaze on your visage, Tim Riley. In any event, we were going to do that with Scotty, though, where, like his right arm would say, you know, like Eco-PDX, and his left arm would say, like, Denny's. And then he's, you know, and he would have, like, a Hooters sign on his forehead, and then, his thorax was brought to you by Best Buy or something. And it's one of those things that didn't really work out. Didn't really come together. Okay. We might actually just start sponsoring his existence, period. Because, like, we had the studio, you know, it's like there's the Staples Center. This is now the Super Digital Studio. Scotty may, in fact, we could actually probably just sell his name. You know what I mean? Like, he would no longer be Scotty J.
You are just such a shameless whore.
Absolutely. Look, whatever cage is in the black, I don't care. I'm not proud. I really am not. It doesn't matter. Like, instead of Scotty J, we could just, I mean, I'm willing, if we just want to name him Olive Garden, that's fine. I don't care. Whatever. Red Lobster, get into the studio now. Doesn't matter. If you'd like to sponsor Scotty J, you can call Dean Snyder at 503-222-1011. 503-222-1011. It is 503-733-2970 and so forth. 503-733-2970 if you'd like to call. If you want to email us today, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com with your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your corrections, your 2 cents, your what have you. 503-733-2970. Or you can email. It's rick@rickemerson.com. People are already calling about whatever.
I just got the creepiest friend request. It's such a, but the profile's private. Is it
just a picture of a huge taint?
It's a strange looking dude, and all it's, cause you can't see his profile because it's private, and all it says is seeking women between the ages of 26 to 44.
Well, at least he's specific.
Oh, is there a photograph?
Oh yeah. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
You know what reminds me of?
A turtle.
What?
Looks like Gonzo.
That's terrible. Oh, Gonzo from the Muppets?
Mm-hmm.
Not Dr. Gonzo from Fear and Loathing, but Gonzo from the Muppets.
I will not be your friend.
Seeking women between the ages of 26 and 44.
How creepy is that?
You know, here's the thing about that.
And he lives here. He's from Portland.
Boy, guys are just goddamn stupid. Let me just talk for a second about how guys are dumb. And I say this as a dumb guy. I know of what I speak. Guys are such retards in that they put these weird restrictions and limitations on the women that they're seeking. And it's always just some guy that's just out to, like, find some woman to stoop. And there's, I will not date a woman over the 125. Like a guy knows what a 125-pound woman looks like. You know what I mean? Or like that guy. Seeking women between the ages of 26 and 44. Unless you want to saw her open and count her rings, there's no way that you're going to be able to determine how old a woman is. It's like, because of internet pornography, all guys think that women are 36 triple Ds. You know what I mean? Because they've just spent a lot of time reading Harry Potter fan fiction. Yeah. All right. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. I don't even remember what I was talking about. I was doing a thing, and then I said that thing about Wile E. Coyote, and now people are calling. I swear to God, it says on the screen, cartoon tirades. That's what people are calling about. We'll get those in a second. Coming up today, Steve Kastenbaum will be joining us from CNN. He's going to talk about Russell Simmons, who got, what do the kids say? Pwned? Owned? Whatever?
Punked?
Punked, yes. Also that by Stephen. It wasn't so much that Stephen Colbert pwned him. It was just that, Russell Simmons is not terribly bright. I'm not saying that he's not a good businessman. He is. He is a hip-hop mogul. But sometimes, it's like how Mel Tillis can sing well, but when he starts to speak, it's just a bunch of pops and buzzes. Russell Simmons might be a great businessman, but boy, damn did he come off as stupid on the Colbert Report last night. He just came off as just really just the brain of a tree stump. So that didn't work out well. We'll talk to Steve Kastenbaum about that.
And Richard recommends that we ask him to rap, too.
Steve Kastenbaum?
Mm-hmm.
He's a little nervous, but here's his rap. Okay, I'll do that. We'll talk to a CNN radio correspondent, Lisa Goddard, as well. We will play, I didn't get to this yesterday, but now that the listener party is done and out of the way, there's all this stuff that's been stacking up. So now that the listener party's done, finished, and it's in a can, as they say. I'm going to read this article from the Oregonian, which apparently has a really stunning edifice. If you see the Oregonian building, Sarah claims it looks all gothic.
From PGE Park when I was at the Timbers game, looking up, you could... It's so pretty. I've never seen it from any other angle except for PGA Park.
I don't think I've ever seen the Oregonian building from above, you know, from up. So there's a lot of buildings like that. And, you know, there's buildings downtown that you don't really look at a lot, and then when you finally inspect them, they're ringed with goblins or whatever. There's weird gargoyles at the top. There's a lot of buildings downtown that have weird crap all around the upper, you know, the top of them, but you don't ever really notice it. Anywho, so we'll talk about this terrible Portland. I think it's the city that's come up with this. It's some terrible song. We talked about this last week, but we didn't really play it. City Commissioner Randy Leonard, they're trying to find the official Portland, Oregon theme song or some song to market us to people, tourists, whoever. I don't know. Here's how you know it's bad. We'll play it later this hour. Here's how you know it's bad. This is the Portland City theme song that City Commissioner Randy Leonard is pushing. Apparently, it's a... It's a brassy funk composition with an impressive saxophone solo.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. All right, so we'll play that. We've got a memo from inside the bowels, and I do mean bowels, of Clear Channel. We'll do the top five and so forth. It's 503-733-2970. We'll do these phone calls in like 30 seconds. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah Dillon and so forth and the Hey Hey.
Hi, hi.
And having gone through and surveyed all of the listener party photos this morning, I took out any that offended you, and I took out any in which you looked, and I'm quoting now, like you had Down syndrome. There was a great, there was a photograph that I found really cute.
I don't know what's wrong with you.
Well,
that was not cute. I looked cross-eyed and mentally disabled. Not to say that all mentally disabled people look bad.
I like girls with heavy folds around their eyes.
That was not a good picture. Hey, and little
man. I like
man,
girls who were heavily lidded.
There were some that you took out for vanity's sake. Don't pretend you're above me.
What did I take out for vanity's sake? I didn't take out any photographs of me for vanity's sake. Oh, that one. Yeah, I took that one out. That wasn't for vanity. That was self-preservation. Oh, where might they be seen? They're not posted yet.
Oh.
Yours all looked flawless, by the way.
Yeah.
If you want, I'll give you the hard drive. I'll tell you where the folder is on the drive if you want to scour through them.
Although sometimes it's hard to tell the difference between me and a root. He's about the same size and build as I am.
I suppose. I guess if it was sort of from farther away, maybe it'd be difficult. The really unfortunate part is this, is that there were 289, I think, that we looked through. We ended up taking out four. Three of them of Sarah because she was like, you know, I look bad, I look weird.
I let you keep in a bunch of bad ones, too.
I have Down syndrome. The one of you in the studio, I swear to God, you're sitting at the control board. I mean this sincerely now. Sitting at the control board running the show, and you looked, as they say, just as cute as a bug's ear. And she just insisted that she looked retarded. And I don't mean retarded like silly. I mean retarded like, eh. And so she just screamed that we had to take it out. I took out one of me. I'll give you the folder so you can look through it and see if there's anything that displeases you. Other than that, they're going to go up by the end of the day. I think they will be posted up at 970.am by the...
I don't think I did anything naughty there.
No, yours are...
No, you're perfect.
No, you actually are the most photogenic of all of us in this batch of photos.
Well, I enjoy working the crowd.
No. Of course.
Am I working the crowd? You mean sitting downstairs?
No, I spent more floor time than anybody in this room.
That's not true.
I think it is
true. We were there till 11.
Oh, but, yeah, but you were the time that I was there.
So really, if you rate it, if you prorate it out for the 2 hours that Tim Riley was in attendance, but you did the Tim Riley thing, while, you know, so anyway, yes, Tim, that's, and then I turned around and just, like Kaiser Soze, you're just
totally,
gone.
Yeah.
Gone into the wind.
I went up for a breath of fresh air.
The air is much sweeter in Tannisborn. I have to go home and get some air. I'll be back. Never. Anyway, so those will be up. Those will be up by the end of the day. We'll get these calls in a second. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
Well, wait till I get my hands on the person to use my credit card number to call lusty ladies and run up hundreds of dollars in bills on my credit card.
Fantastic. Do you have the numbers for said lusty ladies?
I don't.
We don't have that. We can't call it and find out if it's like the ass line or whatever, the ask for hot babe, you know, action line.
I suppose more than likely it was.
Fantastic.
Meanwhile, the Virginia Tech shooter also hired a lusty lady for the evening in his final days, but he just watched her dance and then washed his hands. A new report shows Portland police very seldom use force. A Salem boy dies after humping a computer cleaner, and Sanjaya tells Letterman he's an entertainer, not just a singer.
Of course. Who was it that did that? I think that was Clyde. I should probably say what I'm talking about out loud since that comes on the heels of the school shooting story. The shooting. I think it was Clyde, and it was when we were in Salt Lake. God, was it Clyde that it... We came into the studio, and it was... Like, the phone in the studio at that time, this is back in about 1995, 96, had this LED screen that would show you the last number that had been dialed. And I think it was Clyde who was running the board. And I came in and looked at the phone, and it was like a 1-900 whatever.
Oh, man.
And so I pick it up, and I just hit redial just to see what it was, right? Because I thought maybe it's a weather service or something, or maybe it's you know, whatever, some sort of news or sports hotline or whatever. And the woman, and this has become my go-to phrase, whenever I have to describe a 900 number or some phone sex number, this is always what I go to because it was just the most hilarious phrase. She answers and she says, you've reached, I wonder if this phone number still exists. I almost want to call it, just like that kink.com site. I want to call this number just to see if it's still there. You called it, and she just said, you've reached 1-900. Ask for ass. Which is, and she
that's not real.
That's what she said. And I'm assuming it was ASK. What would that be?
Two,
yeah, ASK number four, ASS.
2754 277.
Ask for ass. Which,
and that's what Clyde was calling?
I'm not saying Clyde was calling it. I'm saying I went into the studio and said number that dialed said voluptuous vixens. Was on the phone, implying that that had been the last number called. Now, of course, as we will all agree in this room, board ops and weekenders cannot be trusted to do anything correctly. So who knows who was calling it? I'm just saying. All right. Fantastic. It's 503-733-2970. Warning, the Rick Emerson Show may give you itchy skin and hypertension. Let's see. Let me just do these really quick. I haven't called it since then. That's not true. Scotty's asked me how long I've called ass for ass. I actually have called it since then, but only in the context of the radio show, because it was always good for a funny laugh. It was always good for a view. See, the thing is, I didn't even know, like, 900 numbers, and presumably, these fraudulent charges on your credit card were 900 numbers. I didn't even think they existed anymore. I mean, it's like in the age of the cyber sex.
Maybe they're way back in the back pages of the Inquirer or something.
Maybe, I suppose. Or maybe your car was just stolen by somebody really old. Just somebody who doesn't know the internet exists.
Just homebound?
Seriously, somebody who doesn't know that you don't have to pay for that anymore. You can just go online. It's hot and cold running filth. So it makes this country great. All right, let's just do these really quickly. This is John wants to chime in quickly. Hello, John.
Yeah, hey, really quickly.
Yes, sir.
The times that the coyote did speak, we got the Wile E. Coyote super genius.
Super genius.
I love that.
Yeah, see, do you remember now, Tim?
I do remember that part.
Wile E. Coyote, super genius.
Super genius.
He had a business card that said that as well.
The other thing was, I'm here to pick up the order that I called in the other day. I'm at Jal Pal, I'm sorry. No, the other thing is, for the Portland song, couldn't we rework something of the old Look for the Union Label song from the 80s?
You know, Look for the Union Label is one of those jingles that I know existed, but I couldn't even tell you how it goes.
It was such a sorry thing. It was a bunch of factory workers standing around all monotone, just look for the... Oh, it was horrible.
That's sort of the... There's just sort of a beaten, broken kind of working man's anthem.
Exactly, yeah. The overseer standing behind him, you know, the paymaster standing just behind him, you know.
Look for the union label. All right, it'd be like look for the union jack label.
Something. Great stuff.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. Or we could rework it to a long way to Tipperary. You know, or whatever. We'll get Alexander in a moment. Mike, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick. Hey.
What's up? How can I help you?
Coyote. Always pissed me off because he was so smart, but he couldn't catch a stupid bird.
A lot of anger coming out of you about an animated creature, sir.
Why can't he just go to the store and buy a chicken?
Well, because he's in the middle of southern Utah. He's in Moab. There's no stores. Curiously enough, a lot of trains and trucks are going by, but no stores.
Okay.
That is a fair point, actually. Now, here's a question. Why didn't he just have he could send away for things from Acme. Why didn't he send away for food? That's a fair...
Exactly!
Now, I didn't mean to stoke your anger. Maybe it's a point of pride with him. Maybe it was a point of pride that he had to hunt and catch his own food. He didn't want to stoop to buying it.
Okay, we're, like, really sad now that we're, like... dissecting this cartoon now.
Yeah, and we're all like 60 too, so there you go. Alright, thank you.
Later.
Alright, there you go. You know, what's really sad is that those cartoons never get old either. I mean, I'm 34 years of age, and I'll sit and I'll watch Roadrunner cartoons, and they just make me giggle like a child. I mean, they make me laugh hysterically. I mean, and without the aid of substances, I mean, I will sit there and laugh myself sick at those. Lara witnessed that firsthand when we were first together. We were there, like, hanging out or whatever. We're just, like, sitting on the couch or in bed or whatever on, like, a Saturday. And, like, the Roadrunner cartoons come on. And, I, you know, at the time, I was, like, 29, 28, something like that. And it comes on, I'm just laughing until I'm weeping. I mean, it's just a cartoon. It was like 50 years old then. You know what else says that to me? Even now that I'm at 34 years of age, you know what still makes me laugh hysterically? Peter Sellers as Inspector Clouseau. Inspector Clouseau films, like Revenge of the Pink Panther or The Pink Panther Strikes Back, Return of the Pink Panther, man, I will just... All it takes is for Kato to charge at him out of a refrigerator and for them to crash through a wall. That's all it takes, man. All right. Alexander, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, I was just talking to EcoPDXJ, and...
Thank you. See, that's totally what it's going to be. When we get him sponsored, he's not going to be Scotty J. He really, I mean, you'll say, like, oh, I was just talking to Firestone Radio J, or whatever it is, yeah. I have no shame. I'm not above anything.
Well, especially when it comes to other people's names.
Absolutely.
Right? Hey, I just wanted to bring up a quick little story. There was a robbery went bad. When a fellow tried to open his folding knife and was unable to, and the clerks at the postal annex just started laughing at him, and finally he got embarrassed from all the laughing and ran away.
We did that.
I'm trying to think.
It sounds so familiar. Where did I hear this story?
Well, that was probably because your godlike news director read it on the air yesterday or the day before.
The day before yesterday is probably when he read it on the air. Yeah. Probably Sunday.
Well, the only other newsman who ever comes close to Tim Riley, Paul Harvey, was also reading that news story today.
My goodness. Yes?
Well, it was just kind of fun to hear our city mentioned by...
So
it became a national story.
So the thrill is that Paul Harvey was talking about Portland, Oregon. Well, I guess that is...
Well, it is a great story. I mean...
I guess my issue is that's almost proof that Paul Harvey's not dead. Because really, how would you know? Seriously, I mean, how would you know?
Well, there's so many people that...
That's like a hostage being taken, you know, having their photo taken with today's newspaper. You know what I mean? That's almost proof that Paul Harvey still draws air. Because otherwise, how would you know? He's been doing the same, and now you know the rest of the story. You know, for like 100 years. No, so do I. But they've just been recycled. I mean, how would you even tell? He sounded old then. He sounds pretty much as old now. There's no way to tell when the radio show is being rerun.
Well, the sad thing is his son will often fill in, and his son sounds like 180 years old as well.
Totally.
And I don't know if now it's just this, you know, sort of like the Chris Brown doing Haggard the Horrible.
I was just going to make that pop culture reference. Oh, damn you. I was just going to say, Paul Harvey... That is the equivalent. Yeah, that is totally the equivalent not Bill Keane, but Chris Keane or whatever his name is,
right,
doing Family Circus for Bill Keane. And how?
Right.
And by the way, you and I and Tim are like the three people in the entire world that care about this right now. But it's totally. And let me just say this: if you watch the Family Circle, Circle's a magazine.
It's Circus in a Circle.
Okay. If you watch the Family Circus on the comics page for a while,
First
it was Bill Keane, Bill Keane, Bill Keane, Bill Keane, you know, the signature. And then for about a year and a half, it was Bill Keane and Chris Keane. And then eventually they phased out the Bill Keane signature. And now if you look at it, it's just his son. So, of course, you know, the dad has been dead for like 20 years.
Right.
And they're slowly phasing it away. And I was thinking about this the other day, actually. I was sitting there. It was at some restaurant. I was sitting at my father's place. The newspaper's sitting there, and I'm looking at the comics page, and I'm looking at Peanuts, right? And I'm thinking to myself, it must suck. Well, I was thinking that. First of all, it's not funny. And then I thought, it must suck to be an up-and-coming cartoonist, because now not even the death of someone who's doing a comic strip can get you a space in the newspaper. It's sort of like you're sitting at the card table at the Thanksgiving dinner, your grandmother dies, and they just leave her at the main table for another 10 years. You know what I mean? For another 10, another decade, your grandmother's corpse is strapped to the chair in the dining room, and you're still in the garage. I mean, I'm just saying. All right, thank you.
You know, I actually...
For the love of God, yes?
Sorry.
This has gone like an hour. Yes?
I actually met Chris, and he's a really nice fellow.
Is this an anecdote about how you met the guy who's now drawing the Family Circus?
No, the guy that's drawing Hager the Horrible. Right. He told
Aren't they the same person?
No, it's Chris Brown and his dad was Dick Brown.
All right.
And he said he agonized over about whether to keep his father's name or not. And so it was Dick Brown, and then he would just sign the comic down in the bottom of Chris Brown. And then he went to buy Chris Brown. And now he's back to Dick Brown and then deciding the comic in the bottom, Chris Brown.
Who does High and Lois?
Jesus, that's God, I don't know. But I can feel myself getting fatter, and I can feel the show being simulcast on Channel 14.
That's the comic.
this entire conversation. All we need to do is talk about the liberal media and gun control now. Yes, and I need to get little beady pig-like Augustus Gloop eyes.
Okay, I go now.
All right. Thank you, Alexander.
Good day.
God damn, that was a long call. Alexander.
I barely knew her.
All right. 503-733-2X. People are still calling. How could people be calling about Hagar the Horrible?
For the love of
God. And why do cartoon characters only have four fingers? Why is that? Why, Helen? All right. 503. I didn't even get a chance to talk about this, this thing that I now will never talk about. Screw you all. We'll be... I swear to God, look at this. Look at the phones. That's it, you know?
And they're all about cartoons?
They're all about comic strips. Not cartoons, comic strips.
Oh.
Oh, except for this one, which is about Paul Harvey. I think we've tapped a heretofore undiscovered.
Have you ever read the dinosaur comics on the back of the Mercury?
Yeah, they kind of bug me.
Really?
Yeah. Because I don't understand them.
Because they use the exact same pictures every single week.
Oh, like
red
meat.
The text.
Like red meat does that.
It's hilarious.
That is funny.
And I have a friend named Tuggy, and some of them feature Tuggy the tugboat hero. And I like to cut them out for Tuggy.
Hmm. I guess they're hipster comics. They totally are.
They're not. They're funny. I would think you'd appreciate
in the back
concept.
Of the. But isn't the joke that they're not funny? Isn't that the thing with those comics in the inside of the Mercury back page? Like the joke is that there's no joke, and so isn't that the deal? I'm not trying to be confrontational about it, but I mean, isn't that the thing that like it's sort of ironic? Like the joke is that they're not really.
No, they're
funny.
Hilarious. Like
red meat is funny.
No, the dinosaurs, you know, they're always like this, and they're crushing houses and stuff. And a couple weeks ago, it was like throw your hands in the air and dance like you're just okay. It was all about the dinosaurs trying to figure out how to dance.
And it's the same photo but with different captions.
Yeah, every week.
All right, maybe I'm thinking of something else.
I'll send it to you.
They do that on The Onion, where they do the personality poll, you know, the man on the street poll, and it's the same three photos every week, and it has been for about 14 years.
Oh, the Mercury does that, too, on their third page.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. It's hard to do anything at this point.
I'm finding you a funny one, Rick Emerson. I'm fixing it for you.
I'm going to take this Paul Harvey call, and then we're going to break. Every time you complain, I'm going to take another one.
I can silence you, Rick Emerson.
Please don't silence me.
I will.
Let's see. Let's take two Paul Harvey calls, and then we'll break. Hey, what's up?
Hey, not much. Hey, I remember, like, 10 years ago listening to Paul Harvey.
Yeah.
And at the time, I don't know, he was, like, 70-something. And he was talking how he was amazed that they re-upped his contract for another 20 years.
I mean, that's great, though. Come on. It is fantastic.
Yeah.
You really got it. You got to admire that. I mean, that guy is a legend. He really is.
Yeah, and he was talking about how he was just going to retire and enjoy the rest of his life, but they re-upped his contract for another 20 years.
I mean, what is he going to do? What's he gonna go do? Do you gonna go spend the rest of his money on whores? I mean, there's no. What are you gonna do when you're Paul Harvey? How many Craftmatic adjustable beds and like dialysis machines can you really buy? It's a gold plated colostomy sack. Well, welcome to your retirement.
Yeah, have a nice one.
All right, thank you.
You bet.
Final call before the break. Hello, sir. How can I help you?
Harvey Jr. is far too satisfied with himself or something. He makes my skin crawl. Harvey Jr., the son, it's like he's suppressing a giggle with every syllable or like sitting on something for his own amusement.
This is Paul Harvey Jr. you're complaining about.
He's just a full-grown man who just, his voice seems to indicate that he'd rather be lying on his back giggling. It's unnerving.
Does this audience seem to have disproportionate anger about weird things? I called up earlier to complain about Hagar the Horrible. You're calling up to complain about what you call an excess of jubilance in Paul Harvey Jr.'s delivery.
He's so pleased with everything that, I don't know, it kind of pushes me toward fear. Thanks for letting me get that off my chest, though, Rick.
Yeah.
Jim Riley rules.
Yes, he does, sir. All right, Paul Harvey Jr. is too vigilant. Let's kick his ass. All right. Jesus, we're breaking that. 503-733-2970. Back with, I swear to God, more Paul Harvey calls. Lisa Goddard around the corner. Coming up at noon, it's Tim Riley with the AM 970 Moon News Hour. Stay tuned. Some weird things on the screen sometimes.
Did you read the dinosaur comic?
I did. They made me laugh. They made me chuckle. If you go to my MySpace page, it's myspace.com/Rick Emerson. Sarah has posted two dinosaur comics.
And I posted two back-to-back so you can see the hilarity of how the pictures.
It does remind me, I was saying, it reminds me of this cartoon that Aaron turned me on to, this comic called Alien Loves Predator, where it's the alien, the Giger alien, and Predator, and they live together. I think they just live together. I don't think they're domestic partners. I think they just live together as roommates. But they just have, like, it's like a Bert and Ernie thing, but it's Alien and Predator. We'll get Tom and Cece here in a few. It's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, let us welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. From the Hill, CNN and radio correspondent to the stars, Lisa Goddard. Why, hello there, and how is your Tuesday?
Well, hello. It's been crazy. It's a bit frantic right now, but everything else is good. How are you?
I'm fine. Please do explain the nature of said craziness.
Well, how about, you know, every Tuesday, or maybe you don't, every Tuesday, the Democrats and Republicans go to their mutual corners of the Capitol, and they have what's called the policy luncheon. It's a big event because it is the one day of the week that a television camera is allowed anywhere near the Senate chamber. All the senators come out, they do interviews, it's all the TV people, it's a very big deal, especially for them. But basically every politician uses this as a big stump speech opportunity. Well, most Tuesdays, or many Tuesdays anyway, Vice President Dick Cheney comes and speaks to the Republican caucus, but he always goes out, sneaks through a little back door. You never see him. Today, however, because of this war of words going on between the White House and the Capitol, Vice President Cheney stepped on up to the mic and basically called out Majority Leader Harry Reid by name, saying he's been irresponsible, he's hurting the war. It's really getting pretty ugly. Just minutes before that, Nancy Pelosi, in a separate news conference, had said that the way the president is responding to Capitol Hill, essentially, is the way a president would respond if his administration were in disarray.
Boy, you know, can I just say, first of all, Dick Cheney is a terrifying, if somewhat awesome, individual. Because didn't I just hear something? Wasn't he just hospitalized to get some horrific clot or something going on?
I don't know how horrific it is. It's hard to say, but he did, in fact, go back to the hospital today for another checkup. Apparently it wasn't scheduled, so it's not clear why he went today. But they did another look at that leg, and they say that his blood-thinning medication is working and that the clot looks fine. You know, between us, I haven't had time to cut up the sound yet of Vice President Cheney, but if you get the chance to listen to it, of course I'm supposed to be listening for the news for what's going on in Iraq, and I was listening to all that. But the thing that stuck out the most to me was his breathing, which was really, you know, every time he would say something, there was a... You know, like you could hear kind of that. I don't think it's quite yet reached wheezing, but it was very, very, very easy to recognize that there was some active engagement there with the muscles trying to breathe.
That's his Dark Lord of the Sith respiratory apparatus that you hear kicking in there. And I won't dwell on it except to say that, like, he's had like 100 heart attacks, so I would think that every clot development is a serious one. But I get the feeling. I get the feeling that everything to Dick Cheney is just a war. Everything is just an absolute ground assault war, and that he views the clot as some sort of horrific enemy that he will simply not bow to. And it really, and I wish him a long life and the best of health, as we do to all government officials, but I do get the feeling that he, when and if his time comes far in the future, I get the feeling he's just going to go down swinging and cursing and fighting and just flailing and just, you know, really the Grim Reaper is just going to have to come with both hands and reinforcements, because Dick Cheney's going to live to like 500. He seems just too mean to die. That's kind of his thing.
Well, the question is, you know, what does Fidel Castro have? Because whatever he's got, he's getting it done.
National health care.
He's going to get some test product.
We'll move on.
That's true.
When you were talking about this war of words between Dick Cheney and Harry Reid and so forth, and I know that George Bush's thing is I will strong. He says, keeps saying, I'm going to reject this artificial timetable for withdrawal. And that's the Republican spin machine at work, because, of course, regardless of partisanship, what the White House has is an artificial timetable. When you say mission accomplished like 2.5 years ago and we're still there, that's an artificial timetable. When Democrats or whoever want to give you an actual date to leave, that's a real timetable. I mean, is that a fair assessment?
I don't know. I think it would be, to try and really get out of the spin, the truth is the White House has offered no timetable. I'm not sure that you would call it artificial. They really haven't presented any timetable. The only real times that we've heard from the president is he has indicated in the past year that he thinks the next president will still be dealing with a U.S. troop presence in Iraq. But that's really the only clear timetable that they've issued. Now, initially, they said this troop surge that's underway right now was supposed to be temporary, and they indicated that that was going to be a matter of months, maybe 6 months, that kind of thing. Well, now we know from the Pentagon that the way they are changing troop rotations, and we've talked about this before, would allow this troop surge to last for a year. So the timelines are unclear, but the Pentagon is clearly enabling the U.S. military presence to last longer, not shorter, as opposed to Congress, which is trying to move it out more quickly.
The White House is obviously seizing on these Harry Reid comments that the war is lost and whatever. And
right.
I mean, is anything clearly when that gets said, the White House must love that in some weird way because it gives them like a tangible face for the enemy. It gives them something that they can wave in front of the American people. That gives them a Democratic villain to sort of wave around.
Well, the first sign that when you're near the Senate anyway, I'm trying to say too much at once, around the Senate, one of the first signs that someone has made a major mistake is when Trent Lott comes out, and he's one of the first to seize on it, and comes out, and you can tell he looks like he's just swallowed a catbird. He's so happy to talk about it in a way, but that man knows his strategy. And I spoke to him actually just in the last 15 minutes about this, and he really liked to talk about what a mistake it was that Harry Reid said that. He said the American people are saying they're disappointed with Harry Reid. And I said, well, who exactly, where are you getting that from? Is there a poll? Where are you getting it from? He said, I was just talking to my uncle yesterday.
Fantastic.
And he's very upset.
My uncle in Des Moines is furious.
No, right, exactly. And another great comment, just as a side note from that discussion with Trent Lott, is he said, I certainly understand when something you say could be misinterpreted.
That's funny. That's funny. You know, that's why I like, it's hard to hate that guy, because he's got a wink in his eye, that guy.
He really does. But he was working that comment, and all the Republicans are. They realize that Harry Reid did sort of step on a mine by saying that.
But I mean, isn't that what the, I mean, from your point of view, and we're going to wrap things up here, but from your point of view, isn't that what the Democrats or whoever has to do to get attention is to just come in? That was the magic of Howard Dean, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was just to come out and to just, as they say, cut through the noise.
That's right, but I think saying that we've lost the war, saying the war is lost versus we're losing the war, I mean, those are they sound similar, but they're very different when you get into the game of rhetoric up here. And I think he just took it a step too far because there's so much concern for the troops still. There's so much concern for military families. No one wants to make it seem that the troops overseas are fighting for a worthless cause. And by saying that the war is lost, you sort of get into that gray area there. So I think Harry Reid just needs to be more careful with what he said there.
Has anybody, and I swear to God this will be the final question, has anybody mentioned to the White House or has anybody asked the White House about something that has kind of been talked about in the last day or two, that we flew all the flags in the country at half-mast for the Virginia Tech students, but not for any of the soldiers killed in Iraq?
That's an interesting question. I don't know that anyone has asked that.
I guarantee you that's going to be something within the next week you're going to hear the administration ask me. You write that down. Sometime in the next week, somebody's going to ask the Bush administration why we're not flying flags at half-mast for soldiers in Iraq when we flew it for, God bless them, but flew them for kids in Virginia Tech. So within 10 days at the most, that question will be put to the White House administration. You mark my words.
All right. I will mark that.
All right. Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen, we will have speaks with you soon, Lisa. Enjoy your day.
All right. You too.
There you go. Lisa Goddard on the Hill. Fantastic. All right. 503-733-2970. I didn't call her Rebecca. Not once.
You never called Lisa Rebecca.
You know, I'm just saying I didn't screw that up in any way. I'm always glad when I can get out of any phone call without mangling it somehow. What's that really? Okay. Well, I'll just take these. I'll take these, and then we probably get a break, and we'll come back with Tim Riley. Tom, hello, sir.
Richard, how are you doing?
Thomas, how can I help you?
Fantastic. Hey, not to step on Sporbert's toes, I'm just going to go back to that Paul Harvey thing there. You know, Paul Harvey, I guess he makes like, what, $50 million a year or whatever. And if your dad did and was probably on his last legs, wouldn't you sound a little self-satisfied?
I suppose I never have to work again.
Well, he's probably pulling down $10 million just for the 5 minutes of work a day he does.
No, that probably is true. When his dad kicks, I mean, unless he's some nutcase who leaves it all to PETA or something, I mean, he's going to get all that. Yeah, no, that's true.
Fantastic. We're right on.
Thank you.
Hey,
yeah, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Tom. Yeah, if you know people whose parents are independently wealthy, they are all a little smug. Never going to have to work. Cece, hello.
Hello, Rick. How are you today?
I am dandy, Cece.
You know what?
Dandy.
Oh, you're dandy. Okay. Cartoon characters have four fingers because five fingers make their hands look awkward and big.
Now, my hands don't look awkward and big, and I've got five fingers.
It's the media they use, the outlining and things like that.
Is that true? So when you draw...
Yeah, I took a cartoon class at PSU one summer.
Is taking a cartoon class like going to clown college?
Not at all. Not at all. You have to come up with your concepts. That's the hard part.
Okay. Here's a question then. Are there any mainstream animated cartoon characters that have five fingers that you can think of?
Oh gosh, Beavis and Butthead.
They do. I bet on King of the Hill they have five fingers.
Oh, for sure.
Because they're very. They're not anthropomorphized animals of some kind. They are humans.
No, they're humans.
No, that's true. The Simpsons only have four, though.
That's right.
All right.
Well, the Simpsons. Look at them. They're not real.
Thank you, Cece. All right. Thank you for coming. Okay.
She's a little kooky.
Seriously. Good God.
I think it's something in the air this week. It's a little nutty.
Seriously, that was a whole lot of Zelda Rubinstein there. Zelda Rubinstein. That go to the light, Carol Ann. That was, I kept expecting her to do that. We're strongly psychic, as are you. That's a terrible Zelda Rubinstein.
So creepy.
I don't even know how to do that voice. You know what I'm talking about? The woman from Poltergeist?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I don't even know how to do her voice, though. Hey, somebody sent me the Look for the Union Label song. Let me see here if I have this. This is, somebody mentioned this earlier as being the Portland theme song.
Oh, no.
I am Tom Jones.
Look for the Union Label.
Oh, this is depressing. They just sound so sad.
This is the Portland song?
No. No, this is, I don't even really know what this is for now that I think about it. Really, now that we're having this conversation, I don't really know what to look for the Union Label.
Have you had enough coffee today?
I've had lots of coffee. I've had actually an abundance.
So too much or too little?
I had a big cup of coffee and then I had a huge bottle of Viso. Did you see that we've got Viso chilling in our new Viso refrigerator?
No.
See, because there's no light in there. It's which is fine with me actually, because then the cretins from the outside can't see that it's filled. It's just the whole top shelf is just Viso. So I had me one of them. I don't really know what this song is for. This Look for the Union Label song. It's one of those things everybody references, but...
When you are buying a coat, dress, or blouse, remember somewhere our union sewing.
This doesn't rhyme. The songs have to rhyme.
Our wages flowing.
Is that right?
To feed the kids and run the house we work hard. But who's complaining?
It sounds like that grandma got run over by a reindeer guy.
We're paying our way. So always look for the union label. It says we're able to make it in the USA.
Jesus Christ. Is this the real version of the song? I asked to the air, knowing that no one here knows the answer. This song is 2 minutes and 39 seconds. I will not be playing the whole thing. Where would this be? So this isn't like a commercial jingle. If it was 60 seconds or 30 or 45, then I guess I could see this being played on television or something. And then they would have, it would be like a donut, what they call a donut in radio or TV, which is where there's an opening and then an empty middle section and then a close. So they play the opening, and then like some guy, Joe Theismann, steps on the screen and says, you know, when I was in the NFL, I always looked for the union labels on my jersey. It let me know that workers were being paid a fair wage. Look for the union label where you shop. And then it would have the closing jingle. But this is 2.5 minutes long. Where would they possibly be playing this?
Look for the union label.
This doesn't really make union life sound happy.
Remember somewhere our union
I really am. We're done with the Dust Bowl. All right, it's 503-733-2970. I mean, really, does it really sound like the union's working out for whoever that is? They just sound sad and drunk. All right, Mike, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah, Rick, just a little fact about cartoon characters,
yes,
as
sir.
Far as at least old school ones, all of them, anyone that had a middle initial was always J, like Rocket J Squirrel, Bullwinkle J Moose.
Fred Flintstone's middle name is J, too. Fred J Flintstone.
Yeah, and I believe it's something to do with, I don't know if it's respect for an old animator or something like that, but it's kind of like an unwritten rule with all those.
Interesting. I never really knew that, but you're right. It is true.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right.
All right. There you go. Fantastic. I believe the J stands for Jew. That's, I think that's the case. Look for the union label, won't you please? 503. Really? Is that funny? Is it really? That's funny, Scotty. Is that true? Someone keeps conference calling Scotty with 1-900 ask for ass.
Make sure they charge it to my credit card.
He keeps answering the phone, and it's the ask for ass line on the other end. I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh. Don't do that, Scotty. That's funny. All right, it's the Rick Emerson Show. Back after this. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show. It's 503-733-2970. That's a lie. 503-733-2970. All right, a couple of things. First of all, we just had that commercial for Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that seminar that's coming to town, which is based on a book that Tom's had that author on a bunch of times. Now, I remember about a month ago, we asked, during the Suburban Perspective, about a month ago, we asked Scotty, we said, what books would you recommend, you know, the youth read? Or what are the books that have made an impact in your life? And I believe it came out that you'd read two books in your life. One of them was like some Pat Riley book or some crap, and then the other one was, some was like a football book, and then there was this one, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. But you couldn't remember what it was about. And I swear to God, when that commercial played just now, about 90 seconds ago, Scotty just came in the room to explain a month after the fact that he's finally remembered what one of the two books he has read in his life was about.
But in all fairness to Scotty, we were having this discussion in the kitchen earlier.
So he did remember an hour sooner than I thought.
Yes.
It was a month minus an hour.
I was the one that initiated this conversation this time around.
On your shoulders. Mm-hmm. On your head, Tim Riley.
Yes.
All right. Scotty, why are your nerves frayed today? We got to do the news here, but you mentioned in passing that your nerves
were frayed. He does seem a little crazy.
Well, I quit smoking on Saturday.
See, that's a lie.
Actually, let's put it this
way.
I smoked like smoking was going out of style and you couldn't buy any more cigarettes at Thursday at the party.
Uh-huh.
Friday, I didn't feel so great, so I might have had one or two. And then Saturday, I was done.
So it has been how long to do? So it's been 2 days.
2 days since Saturday, all day Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and today.
How long have you been a smoker?
On and off for 20 years.
Really?
Now, you'll be dead in 5 more years, Scott.
So I may as well smoke and enjoy it, right?
Yes. When is the
it's too late for you, Scotty.
Well, hell, go get me a pack then. No.
When is the last time you quit smoking?
Well, in this 20 years, I've quit for, I think, 2 years at one time.
But when is the last time you quit smoking? Not counting this week.
Friday.
Yeah, I know that because you just told us. I'm saying before that.
It was about a month or so back because I...
I'm so glad I don't smoke.
I made it for like 2 days.
Seriously, I hate to sound like I'm just being smug and superior. I'll leave that to Tim because he's a reformed smoker. He can do it much better than I can. I am so glad that I never smoked. I mean, because I know people with colossal willpower who just can't quit smoking. So I'm not trying to poke fun. I'm really not.
Well,
I'm just glad I never started.
You're 34. You probably feel like you're in your 20s still. I'm 40, and I feel like I'm in my 60s.
Only that were the case. All right. Well, we'll check in with you. Okay. We're going to check in with you throughout the day and throughout the week.
Yeah, the whole reason for this is my nerves are shot, and the ass guy keeps calling me. And it's enough to make you want
to
lose
Scotty.
It.
Scotty, it's best if you just give in.
Okay.
We'll talk to you later because the Rick Emerson Show is going to help you stay off cigarettes.
Nice.
All right. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, he's your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Breaking news, and it's a battle watch. There's your battle watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I want you to remember that no bastard ever won war by dying for his country. He won it by making the other poor dumb bastard die for his country.
Breaking news out of the nation's capital. An Army Ranger who was with former NFL starter Pat Tillman when he died by a friendly fire in Afghanistan testified a little while ago. He was told by a higher-up to conceal that information from Tillman's family. He was given the order by then-Lieutenant Colonel Jeff Bailey, the Italian battalion commander who oversaw Tillman's platoon. Earlier, Kevin Tillman accused the military of intentional falsehoods and deliberate and careful misrepresentations, and initially portraying his brother's death as a result of a heroic engagement with the enemy. We believe this narrative was intended to deceive the family, but more importantly, the American people. We have now concluded that our efforts are being thwarted by powers more interested in protecting a narrative than getting the truth and seeing that justice was served.
Well, you know, and the really weird thing is, and the really depressing thing is, now, by sort of your reflexive impulse is to disbelieve any story of heroism because it always turns out to be some sort of a front, like it was with Jessica Lynch. Where she fought off 500,000, you know, with a bayonet, you know, and then it turns out she was like unconscious for the whole thing. So,
well, yeah. That's it on Larry King. They had old President Bush and his wife on because they have decided single-handedly to fight cancer, and that was the topic of the hour.
Really?
So apparently they're trying to do something about their image by letting it be known to Larry King that they're doing their best to fight cancer single-handedly.
Cancer?
I barely knew her.
I do believe.
Yes?
Nothing. Hold on. I'm just adjusting my face. I do believe that Bush Sr. made some comment. I don't have audio on this, but I do believe that George Bush Sr. made a comment on Larry King last night to the effect of the Bush name being tainted with people. Which is, I mean, and that's like that, and I hate to laugh at someone else's misery, but that's like that photograph of George Sr. and Jeb Bush, like on the floor, they were down there in the well of the Senate, and George Bush Sr. is just weeping like a small child as he's there doing Jeb, because he knows that his idiot son.
Why is he crying? Oh, yeah, his corn's on his feet, and they've been bothering him for the last week or so. Nothing more.
Are you quoting that commercial? I keep using my corn remedy. Nothing seems to work. That commercial runs through Dennis Miller. There's the two women. And they're trying to sound all hot. They're trying to sound all alluring because they want you to, you know, I guess the hot young female demographic needs help with corns. But I have corns. Just, I keep using my corn remedy, but nothing happens. It's all very unnerving. So the Bush family is just desperately trying to dig themselves out of this hideous hole that their idiot son has put them into, which is never going to work, by the way.
What happened to the Iraqi study group?
I don't even know what that is.
Studying elsewhere?
I don't even know what the Iraqi study group is.
Well, they get together and they browse through My Weekly Reader and Highlights Handbook every
day. Was that the thing that James Baker III was part
of? All those old people with their skin hanging down to their ankles. Walking jowls.
I was just going to say jowls. Just a lot of jowls in a tie.
From the 70s.
That's a whole
all these leftover people from the 70s who decided to get together.
When they're not watching Rich Little routines. Just jowls and a crew cut. Dunk. I meant to ask Lisa Goddard about Rich Little, by the way. I did not get a chance to do that. But Scotty totally nailed it. He said that's why Bush Jr. looks like a bozo. And bozo is exactly the word, by the way. He just looks like a doofus. And so just ruining that entire family. I mean, what everyone thinks about George Bush Sr., he was probably evil. He ran the CIA, but you couldn't accuse him of being dumb. Jeb Bush seems, you know, not that stupid. But boy, that son just
blows. He's smart enough for Florida.
Totally.
I mean, how smart do you have to be to run that state? Everyone's making minimum wage, working for Disney, dressing up as animals, being paid $3 an hour. Then they're killing each other when they take off their costumes and go home.
Totally.
That's Florida. Really, it's true. An entire economy based on utopia and crack.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but goddamn, boy, that George Bush, 49 or whatever he is, 40 whatever Bush Jr., Bush W. He's so dumb that he just ruins. I say not being able to name which president he is. He's just so dumb though that he just blows the curve. It's like the opposite of having, like, one of those really genius math whizzes in your class. You know what I mean? It really is like taking a class with some kid off the short bus. And just suddenly everybody else just seems so much smarter.
But it worked for the longest time, didn't it?
It really did.
It really did.
Americans are stupid. Oh, good God almighty.
It worked for several years.
You know, and the thing about the Bushes trying to cure cancer is, if you ever wanted proof that cancer is not going to be cured, all you have to know is that the Bush is about to get rid of it. I mean, the Bush is about to fix Iraq. That hasn't happened. They've to fix Afghanistan. That hasn't happened. They vowed to get rid of drugs. That hasn't happened. They vowed to get rid of Castro. That hasn't happened. So this is now basically, it's sort of the inverse principle. This is now, we have now received solid word from the Bush camp that cancer will be here forever and ever spreading. So, fantastic.
So the president is putting more heat on Congress over his war funding.
I made it clear to the Democratic leaders on Capitol Hill that I'm willing to discuss our differences on the way forward in Iraq.
Are you? Mighty wide of you.
But I also made it clear our troops should not be caught in the middle of that discussion.
What does that really mean?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Veto the bill if it includes timetables.
But instead of fashioning a bill I could sign, Democratic leaders chose to further delay funding our jerks, and they chose to make a political statement. That's their right, but it is wrong for our troops and it's wrong for our country.
He says he has listened to what Americans were saying in last November's elections. Let's hear what that might have been.
Last November, the American people said they were frustrated and wanted change in our strategy in Iraq.
No, they want the war over.
I listened.
And
the American people did not vote for failure. And that is precisely what the Democratic leadership's bill would guarantee.
No, they voted to win the war.
I think we voted to go home now.
Yeah, long time ago, we voted to leave.
I'd like to.
There are a few people that do believe that didn't happen.
I'd like to leave now if I could. Hello? I could just. Where's the out? It's like being lost in Vancouver. Here I. It's like the. It's like looking for the big sign that says this way to leave.
Meanwhile, after returning today, after doctors checked out a blood clot, Vice President Dick Cheney had some harsh words for Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid. He said Reid wants to surrender to Iraq.
What's most troubling about Senator Reid's comments yesterday is his defeatism. Indeed, last week, he said the war is already lost, and the timetable legislation that he is now pursuing would guarantee defeat.
He's playing games.
Maybe it's a political calculation. Some Democratic leaders seem to believe that blind opposition to the new strategy in Iraq is good politics.
That was a terrible thing to say, but boy, goddamn, does he remind me of my mother-in-law. What? That's an awful thing to say. But they just got such the same temperament and tone and bearing.
It could be the blood clot.
Entirely possible. Let's see, what have we got here? This is just somebody calling about George Bush. John, hello, sir.
Hey, Rick.
Hi.
Am I the only person who thinks that George Bush bears a striking resemblance to Alfred E. Newman?
No. It's sort of an Alfred E. Newman cross with what's his name? Prince Charles.
And another reference for you is Scotty J. Sacramone of The Sopranos.
Yes.
Scotty Sack?
I don't understand what you're talking about, sir.
Scotty Sack, who needs to quit smoking, but what the hell, his life is lost. He may as well have another one.
Oh, okay. Was this just really sneaky say Scotty Sack?
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Thanks. Later.
Thanks so much. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, Vice President Cheney is accusing Senator Reid of lying.
Yesterday, Senator Reid said the troop surge was against the recommendations of the Iraq Study Group. That is plainly false. The Iraq Study Group report was explicitly favorable toward a troop surge to secure Baghdad.
Senator Reid is not only lying, he's dishonest.
Senator Reid said there should be a regional conference on Iraq. Apparently, he doesn't know that there is going to be one next week. Senator Reid said he doesn't have real substantive meetings with the president. Yet immediately following last week's meeting at the White House, he said it was a good exchange. Everyone voiced their considered opinion.
That's a long point. But, you know, the thing is, Dick Cheney's just, he will just kneecap you. They just send him out there with a big iron bar to go right for one of your sensitive joints. That's a guy you don't screw with, man. All right. Let's see. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show.
KLTK!
our godlike former program director, Bruce Agler. Hello, sir.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Just referencing a couple of things from the last hour. Doonesbury and Zitz usually have five fingers on some of the characters.
Okay.
Although on Doonesbury, Trudeau seems to usually have the characters holding a coffee cup or something to hide their thumb.
To obscure the fact that it looks weird.
But if you look at the fifth panel or the fourth, whatever, or the last panel of today's Doonesbury, you'll see why hands with five sometimes look a little weird.
Okay.
And then the union song deal, that version you have was the response to a contest they had to write a song for the International Lady Garment Workers Union.
Why do you know this?
I don't know. Anyway, the TV commercial was a 30-second version, and it's a whole bunch of union workers all singing. I sent you that. I can't get it to play on my computer, but check your inbox, and maybe you'll be able to play it. It's a QuickTime file of the actual commercial.
Of the actual yeah. spot. Okay, so this is not like a vintage song.
Well, it's actually... In reading up on it, it was based on some other song, as a completely different song from the 30s, and the guy who won the contest for the union wrote new lyrics for that song.
But it sounds like a vintage recording, but that's just sort of trickery then.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, again, that the contest was some time ago. I don't know what year that was.
All right.
The commercial was on the air in like the 60s and 70s. I mean, they used to just beat us to death with that commercial when I was growing up.
See, so I guess I've never seen it. I must have avoided that song.
Well, the International Lady Garment Workers Union went out of business, basically, because no clothes are made in this country anymore. They merged with some other union. You know, their campaign didn't work very well, so they merged with some other union, and we don't have a lot of American-made clothes to
look for the label for that really strong Chinese workers union. Yeah. All right, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, godlike former program director,
KLTK.
Bruce Agler.
You know who he sounds exactly like?
Bruce?
I was watching these old reruns on the Game Show Network, if to tell the truth. And the host is Bud Collier, who also hosted Beat the Clock and was the voice of Superman on the radio and the Superman cartoons.
Right.
Bud Collier sounds exactly and has the same mannerisms as Bruce Agler. You have to watch his show.
Okay, now I have to find Bud Collier.
Mm-hmm.
All right, excellent. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Meanwhile, the search for the new Pussycat doll ends tonight. This is the show finale. Perhaps Sir X still
around
this program. The show judge and Pussycat founder Robert Anton says it's a lot of pressure for whoever wins.
Our girls have been a part of it for a long time, and so the girl that goes in, she's got a lot of work to do. You know, it's not like, hey, I'm here, okay, everything's cool. It's like, got some work to do, you know, you got to make sure the personalities gel. But I'm excited. I think it's really going to be a great fit.
A Pussycat doll must have it all.
Being a performer, singing and dancing, and, you know, and looking hot. I mean, you know, it's not like I'm looking for, like, a model, you know what I mean? But I'm looking for girls that, like, can really put themselves together and really are, you know, confident with the way they look and the way that they feel about themselves.
Stop talking. I know we've talked about this before, but who is it that runs the Pussycat doll? That's not Diddy. Or whatever his name is.
That's
now.
Out of my demographic.
No, that's
let me go to my right.
Who runs
group.
The who does the Pussycat Dolls?
I don't know.
I mean that can't be. I mean that's one.
It's
of
like
those,
a strip club, doesn't? Aren't they owned by the strip club or something?
I don't know. Isn't that one of those groups that's like run by some dude? It's like some guy, like, you know, like Puffy or whatever his name is, P. Diddy. I can't call, I mean, with a straight face, I can't call a grown man Diddy. But he runs that whatever that girl group is, whatever the hell they're called.
I cannot remember their name.
What the hell are they called? I'm done caring.
We're all sitting here thinking. Nothing's happening. The wheels are still turning and turning and turning.
Vapor lock. Vapor lock. All right, here's Tim Riley. I'm done caring about the girl group. All right.
Well,
that's the well of a, what were we doing? That's what that well is.
Let me regroup.
I know.
I'm trying to find an appropriate spot to pick this up. Well, Chastity Fry said, I'm so shaken by this, I don't know what to say. Chastity Fry. Spent an hour all alone with Virginia Tech killer Cho Sang-hoo last month.
Oh, she's not one of the Pussycat Dolls.
No, this is a different story.
Oh, okay, all right.
She's a lady of the evening. Chastity Fry said he was so quiet, I really couldn't get much from him. He was so distant, he really didn't talk a lot.
Wonder if he used your credit card.
He wasn't at all there. I know, that's what I was thinking. These are from March and April, these charges on my credit card.
So it is entirely possible.
It's really unnerving.
Is your name Tim Riley? Yes, my name's Tim Riley. You come over now. Jesus. So this, now did she have relations with him?
She works for an escort service. She said Cho hired her, and the two met at the Valley View Motel.
Hot. I danced for a little while, and I thought we were done because he got up, went to the restroom, and began washing. So apparently, she just danced. And I said, well, do you want me to go? I'm going to go ahead and go. And he's like, I paid for a full hour. You've only been here 15 minutes. And then he came back to the room. Then I started dancing. And that's when he, you know, touched me and tried to get on me. And that's when I pushed him away.
You're an escort. Well, I can't believe I'm taking the side of the Virginia killer.
He may have only paid for the dancing fee, for all we know.
Oh, I see. Because he's paying for her time.
Right.
Not for her
entertainment.
Yes.
I asked Fry if she was afraid of that point. Oh, apparently. Somebody who interviewed asked. No, because he went away right away. She said she didn't see any guns, any ammunition, nothing else that made her feel nervous. When Chastity Fry saw the news about Cho last week, she thought she recognized him. Then she says FBI questioned her this weekend. They tracked her down through Cho's credit card receipt. Well, they asked me what happened, and then they asked me if anything stuck out. Apparently, it didn't happen in this case. They wanted to know three words that described him, Fry said. What three words did she use? I used dorky, timid, and pushy.
I can't believe he was angry.
Yes, there at the end, he was a little bit pushy. Let's see. I don't know what to think. I'm just very grateful that nothing happened then. Sometimes I wonder if I could have said something or done something differently. Maybe talked to him a little bit more, you know? Try to get him to open up?
Right.
Did you see that thing about, he was creeping me out.
Yeah, seriously.
I was thinking about getting out of there.
Did you see that thing about the what's his name, Cho? It's funny how we've all just decided that's his name. No one knows. I couldn't tell you his real name.
But you can't pronounce the other two names he has.
No. And I can't even tell what order you're supposed to read those names in. It's funny, that guy, we've all just decided his name is Cho.
Sure, that's good enough.
It's weird. Did you see that thing about how he was ordering all those rubber ducks off eBay?
Uh-huh.
He was ordering huge rubber ducks in lots of 12 and doing nothing with them, I think. He was ordering rubber ducks off eBay. They had to be large and they had to be in boxes of 12.
I better double check my receipts for my credit card.
Seriously. These rubber ducks, what are you? Yes, they go to me, Tim Riley. Fantastic. The weird thing is, not to dwell on the credit card fraud for the hot slut liner or whatever it is was on your credit card, is that you just discovered that by going over your bill that your company didn't tell you. That the credit card company didn't tell you.
Right.
I mean, that's the weird thing, that, you know, because presumably that's someone who ran across the card or found the card number somewhere or whatever. And so it's a recent occurrence on the bill, and that you had to find it. It's interesting that the credit card company, you know, for like, you know, whatever, the first 32 years of your life, no phone sex charges on the Visa. Suddenly, X hundred dollars worth of phone sex charges. Just let it go without saying. Don't point it out. Hell, I tried to buy a suit, and they called me and thought my card had been stolen.
Oh, you need to borrow mine.
Anything goes. And the next time I have to buy something weird or embarrassing, I'm just using your card because no one ever points anything out.
No. Nope.
The credit card company never questions anything. What do you need to buy? I need to buy a truck and some fertilizer.
And also, are done. And 48 pounds of Jell-O.
And, you know, Wibbs, apparently it's fine. Yeah, I tried to buy a hat at Helmer's Haberdashery downtown, and they called me. They're like, your card has been stolen.
Oh, those are expensive hats.
Yeah,
they sell a hat man's hats there.
I suppose. But, I mean, it does indicate exactly how trashy I am that trying to buy a hat was enough to tip off my credit card company, and they didn't think it was me. Because normally the only things I buy are boxes of macaroni and spray cheese.
But you're very seldom seen with a hat.
It's true. Normally, if it's not really, if it's not at the Gap, it's almost never bought on my card, clothing-wise. So the fact that there was some clothing that didn't come from Lloyd's Center, that was enough to alert my credit card company that they thought that it had fallen into the right hands, so to speak. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, apparently, they didn't extend me that same courtesy. Meanwhile, Senator Obama has opened the floor to all questions relating to his ties with indicted political fundraiser Tony Rezko. A Syrian-born Illinois resident is accused of taking money from a fund that benefited those in affordable housing. Addressing the issue yesterday, Obama said he only did a few hours of legal work on contracts and ultimately hired Rezko as the developer, whatever that
is. I did 5 hours of work on these issues. My involvement had to do with helping to form the corporations,
under the supervision of more senior attorneys, and that was the extent of it.
All right.
No, that guy's Teflon. Nothing sticks to him. Not yet, anyway.
No.
Well, let's talk about Sanjaya.
Can we, please?
From American Idol.
Right.
His media blitz continued last night with a stop at CBS's Late Show with David Letterman. The one-time American Idol sensation dropped by to help out with the top 10 list.
Things I have learned from American Idol, number 2.
Nothing.
All right.
All right, that's funny.
That was funny.
It's not really Sanjaya, though. He doesn't really get any credit for that. He's just sort of there being creepy. It's a short ride. Save some money.
Let's see here. Sanjaya uses one of Judge Randy Jackson's signature lines when reading the top 10 list.
Randy.
Number 8.
It's very important to keep it real, dog.
Yes, it is.
Got to keep it real.
Oh, that guy's going to have the shortest burn. That guy is going to have the fastest, shortest burn cycle you can possibly imagine.
He hasn't been on the morning shows yet.
That guy's going to be, you know, the thing is, I think that you used to be able to spin that into a lot more fame than you can now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's easy. Here's the thing. I think it's easier to become famous now, but I think it is much harder to stay famous. That is
true.
I mean, I think there are more outlets for it. How do I put this? It's just that it's not that, I guess, maybe. It's just that the fame pool is so diluted now.
Well, we have TMZ also.
That's what I mean. It's just that everybody and their brother is
Nobody's waiting for Entertainment Tonight anymore.
Nope. No, and it
used to be you were spoon-fed this information, but not anymore.
Well, like at the listener party, we played that intro video that was all those YouTube videos of, like, the Bank One guy and the Star Wars kid and the Jenny the Rapping Traffic Girl, you know, and there's so many people that have those YouTube videos, and there's just some tool. It's just some dick from Akron, and he's becoming, you know, some famous internet celeb for X number of minutes. But the fame pool is just so diluted. And there's so much more competition that it's just hard. It's not like back when there were 3 channels. I can't even imagine what it was like to be a celebrity back in 1975 when there were only 3 television channels. And for some reason, I always think about Welcome Back, Kotter. I don't know why. Welcome Back, Kotter is the example I always think of. When you think about being Freddie Boom Boom Washington or Ron Palillo or Juan Epstein or whoever on that program, I mean, they must have just been famous to the nth degree. Because think about how famous this Sanjaya nitwit is. And, I mean, that was one of 500 channels. And that show was only on for, like, 10 weeks. You think about, Gabe Kaplan, who was on a show that must have had, like, a 30 share. And it had a 30 share just by dint of the fact that there was only 2 other channels competing with it. So, it's just weird. I mean, fame isn't what it used to be.
But you used to have to wait for People magazine to come out every week.
To tell you what you should like.
Right.
That's true.
Or... You know, you were spoon-fed little tidbits about people's lives.
Yeah.
You didn't have people really digging into things.
Yeah, and even like the old-school gossip columns, like the Hedda Hoppers of the world, weren't like TMZ. I mean, because, you know, like I mean, I guess Perez Hilton gets accused of buddying up to celebrities and whatnot, but I mean, it seems like there are far fewer rules about that sort of thing.
Right. Larry King's another one.
Oh, totally.
Oh, totally.
But he
doesn't have to ask the tough questions.
He's a holdover from the old school. He really is. Hey, do you enjoy being famous? Do you like omelets? I mean, there's really no tough questioning that goes on in that show at all. All right.
We got one more from Sanjay.
Oh,
he acknowledges speed dialing might have been the downside while delivering the top 10 list.
Number 5.
Voting for yourself 100 times an hour causes some wicked carpal tunnel.
Exactly. Be very careful. Number 4.
When you forget the words, just do this. Whoa, whoa, yes, it is.
I don't ever want to hear that again. By the way, speaking of the shifting nature of American fame, I will now make a pop culture reference that is less than 10 years old, and probably only 20% of the audience will even know what I'm referring to when I say this. I want you to look at Sanjaya, who is, I believe, of Indian extraction, as they say. He is a man of Indian descent. And you look at Sanjaya, I'm telling you this right now, you know it to be true. Sanjaya is the 2007 Indian version of Jesse Camp. And you know that that's true. You look at that big, just a big, tall, skinny bastard with weird hair. He is this year's Indian Jesse Camp. And they're both going to be at the same place next year. It's 503-733-2970. We should take a break. We'll come back. Tim Riley continues around the corner with the AM 970 Noon News Hour. Later on, we'll talk to CNN radio correspondent Steve Katzenbaum. Top 5 and more. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio.
Nation radio program. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, we'll interrogate Scotty about his plan to quit smoking. I don't believe Scotty has a plan.
I don't think so.
I think his plan is to say he's quitting smoking and then to give in and fail. Failer. All right. 503-733-2970. Failer. Yeah. Nah, I don't even care enough. I don't even care enough to go back and fix that one. That doesn't even mean anything, Scotty. Your plan is to machete a jungle. Do you just reach into your head and find random words and just type them on the screen? Okay, so that's fine. We were talking to godlike former program director Bruce Agler, and you noted that he sounded like Bud Collier.
Yes,
from the Game Show Network. Someone has sent me now. This is from... Okay, I swear to God, it's from Bruce. I was looking to see who mailed this to us. Bruce himself sent this. It's a soundbite of Clayton Bud Collier doing a PSA for the war effort. Let's listen to it now, shall we? Collier.
This is Clayton Collier wishing you good day and good dozing. Today you get more money for used fat. The fat shortage is worldwide. Everybody, every day, save every drop. It's worth your while. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Hey, that's great. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
At one time, this is just called Columbia.
We should totally save that. That's a thing. That's a thing we can use in production right there.
For a while. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting
System. And is he talking about saving your fat?
This is Clayton Collier wishing you good day and good dozing. Today you get more money for used fat. The fat shortage is worldwide. Everybody, every day, save every drop. It's worth your while. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
I can see maybe like a more rigid version of Bruce.
You watch him doing the show itself, you see more of him being himself. In this one, he's more like being an announcer.
Right, it is a little stagier.
Right, and he also played Superman on radio, and he was also Superman on the old Fleischer cartoons in the 40s.
Boy, you know.
This is a job for Superman.
Anyway,
change his voice.
I don't know why they don't, you know, that's... never mind. Never mind.
Go ahead.
No, I just... Oh, God, sometimes it just takes so much out of me to get angry about things.
Have you met at Bud Collier?
God damn you, Bud Collier.
He's been dead for like 30 years.
I'm going to go kick up your corpse and set it ablaze. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go strew his bones across the graveyard. Let's see.
Well, you have to watch some of his old shows, and you will see how much he's like Bruce.
I'm not mad at Bud Collier. I was just going to say, I could feel myself... You know what it is? It's like a roller coaster when it's going up the hill, going up, and it's getting ready to whatever... I can feel myself getting all cranked up about this Clear Channel memo that somebody sent to us. This is from somebody at CBS, forward along to all of us. I swear to God, this is what it says. There are these groups that you can forward things to, like all program directors or all promotions, all First Avenue sales. This is to CBS, all radio format captains. I don't believe that I'm a format captain, so I'm not sure exactly how it is that I received this. But this is a, let's see here.
I think that's a military rank within Clear Channel.
I guess, and maybe. You know, Clear Channel, I worked for Citadel, and they were the same. Citadel had this weird juvenile affectation, this military thing, where, like, they weren't program directors, they were, like, field commanders. You know, dude, what are you? I'm the general sales manager. No, you're not. You lead the sales battalion. And it was just retarded. It really was like, you know, some guy trying to compensate. That's what that was. This is a memo from Clear Channel. I don't want to sit and read the whole thing. But this is...
You can stand up and read it.
Memo sent to us that has purportedly been issued to Clear Channel. All of their music stations. Because Clear Channel is sort of, you know, there's like one guy who runs every format. There's like a guy who runs all the rock stations. There's one guy who... And they're not the only company who does this, but they are the most emblematic. They are the worst offenders. One guy who runs all the rock stations. One guy who runs all the talk stations. One guy who runs all the country stations. And so this... And again, I cannot vouch for the veracity of this, but this is from somebody at CBS who is in a position to know, and they claim that this is an internal Clear Channel memo. What was my point? Why did they even start talking about this?
You were mad at somebody. I don't know exactly.
I wasn't mad at Bud Collier. No. Why did I start talking about this just now?
He's sitting on his grave.
But Bud Collier, Bruce Agler, he was announcing. Oh, you were talking about how Bud Collier was the voice of Superman.
Yes.
And I was thinking to myself,
I say, is an idea that will not be stolen. I was going to say, you know, because we did that Behind the Christmas thing years ago. I was thinking, you know, I don't know why somebody on a commercial radio station, I mean like it's NPR or some crap, why somebody on a regular broadcast commercial, commercial broadcast radio station, why they don't bring back the sort of like radio serial or radio drama. Screw it. I might just do that myself. I might just do it myself because somebody ought to. We ought to have that here, don't you think? A daily ongoing 5-minute radio serial.
Fine.
I mean, wouldn't that be amusing?
I think so, yeah.
We do like an ongoing 5-minute-a-day radio, like soap opera serial, complete with like music and sound effects and whatever. It'd be a 5-minute or even less, like a 2 or 3, like Johnny Carson used to do the Edge of Wetness. It'd be like that. We'll do like a 2-minute installment of a live radio serial every single day here. Because, you know, nobody does it because radio is just crap these days. It's just crap.
We're just getting tired of it.
So I've had enough. But listen to this. This explains so much. I know we're interrupting the news hour, but this explains so much from this alleged Clear Channel memo. And if it is true, it doesn't surprise me at all. It says 8-second talk breaks. Now, a maximum of 8 seconds. What can you say in 8 seconds? I can't even say my name in 8 seconds. 8 seconds. That's, hi, you're listening to blah, 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 103. That is the best of the together. How's Canada's guy, Tom Petty. There you go. That's 8 seconds right there. 8-second talk breaks. 20-second talk, 20 seconds talk breaks maximum into a commercial break. All breaks must have content that is musically related. Listen to this. It says this. Phoners, which is when you have like one of those, you know, hey, let's go to the hit phone lines.
Hi, I'd like to request a song.
You know, that whole thing there on a music station. Phoners must be musical related. No witty personality bits. No, of course not. Why would you want to interject personality into your radio program at all? No witty personality bits. All re-entries and sweepers are basically, are very basically produced. In some markets, jocks are to say their names only once per hour. And then it says, what about the local angle? I.e., your market's baseball team sweeping the rivals, or traffic on the highway, or a local incident with the police.
Here's the big fire at.
And then,
that would be 8 seconds.
And then, you are in danger of dying if you live between. And then it says, so it says here, what about the local angle, such as traffic or sports? And then this is in all caps, no, no, no. Concentrate on music. One thought for break. Absolutely no hype whatsoever.
So there must be 8 second thoughts.
Jesus God. No jock topics. No discussions of anything of the day. Oh, God, I wish I was dead. All right, so there you go.
And this is in town?
Well, this is everywhere. This is purportedly a decision, what they call a top-down decision. This is a top-down decision at Clear Channel headquarters, apparently. Mm. To eliminate clutter, or what we call personality and content. God damn, people are stupid. All right.
They deserve what they get.
It really is true. No, and you are absolutely right about that. You know, in the really in the days of Clayton Bud Collier, this wouldn't be allowed to happen. This would not stand.
This is Clayton Collier wishing you good day and good dozing. Today you get more money for used fat. The fat shortage is worldwide. Everybody, every day, save every drop. It's worth your while. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting
System. Totally ending the show with that. How do you save every drop of your fat, by the way? Does that require some sort of a syringe and a bucket? All right. Here's Tim Ryland, the Ministry of Truth.
Well, the new report says Portland police do not use excessive force, and even the use of force is relatively rare. Apparently, the report says that less than 1% of total calls for service and less than 5% of total arrests in Portland involve force. The task force reviewed nearly 4,600 use of force reports from August 2004 to October 2006, just a tiny fraction of the 80,000 police contacts with Portland residents. So the police aren't as mean as you think they are. Meanwhile, a 14-year-old Portland boy, make that a Salem boy, inhaled spray from a can of cleaner used on computer keyboards. You know what happened next?
No, I don't. Is he dead?
He died.
Oh.
The cleaner was used to blow dust out of keyboards and electronics. Apparently, the stuff is similar to Freon. The high from the gas can paralyze the user for several seconds or minutes.
Or, you know, forever.
Making more kids want to use it. It gives them a feeling of euphoria.
Using it gained the nickname Dusting. It is sometimes called Huffing. Huffing or Dusting. Nicholas Brown was found by his older brother in bed shortly before 2 a.m. Monday morning with a can of cleaner nearby. The hydrocarbons in the product can create a heart arrhythmia that leads to cardiac arrest.
Jeez. You can already hear the stupid PSAs being created, though. The next time your kids talk about doing dusting, if Clayton Bud Collier was still alive...
The next time your kids talk about doing dusting, they're not talking about housework.
This is Columbia, CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You know, that stuff, that Freon, that spray stuff in a can is weird, though. I'm unclear about what that stuff even exists for.
I mean, sprays things up between the keys.
Yeah, but I'm talking about something else. That's the compressed air. There's the compressed air in a can. The air is human joke there somewhere. But there's the compressed air in a can that you use to blow dust out of a motherboard or whatever like that. But then there's that Freon that's in a can that has the little WD-40, that little red stube. It's a stube. I was going to say straw and tube, and then it just became stube. It's Freon in a can, and it has that little red straw, that little WD-40 straw tube thing. So you can aim it at a very small surface, and it freezes stuff on contact. But now that I think about it, what is that possibly, what do you need that for? And I know, and I mean, it's around radio stations all the time. Radio stations constantly have cans of that stuff, and it's fascinating. You spray that at an insect, it immediately freezes, it's solid.
Let's ask Scotty to try it.
It's just we totally could. Yeah. Just like freeze a small patch of his skin.
Mm-hmm.
Just give him frostbite in like a really weird area, like on the. Just give him frostbite just on one nipple.
Oh, that sounds like what a dermatologist would use to get rid of a mole or something.
Or if you have itchy skin and hypertension.
Yes.
You know, my sister used to get her. My sister had a mole or a wart. I don't know the difference. What's the difference between a mole and a wart?
Dude, it's the lunch hour.
I'm just saying. I don't know the difference. Please now call and explain the difference.
Well, a wart usually must be removed. A mole you can live with.
Well, is that true?
I would imagine so.
If you have a small
mole, then not all cancer is.
I suppose that's true.
We're not all perfect, like some Hollywood models, now are we?
Like those fat cat big shots.
Yeah.
But my sister had like a wart mole thing. She had buck melanoma, Molly Russell's wart, on the underside of one of her fingers. And when I was about, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, she would have been a teenager. And, of course, teenage sisters, I mean, you know, they love to torment their little brothers. Girls get a perverse thrill when they are bigger than or older than a boy, and they can just torture him. And so my sister is so gross. I think they finally got rid of it with some sort of medicine they put on it or whatever. But I remember they would freeze this wart. She got this wart frozen off. And then at one point, I swear to God, they burned it off. And I think it came back like a witch. But they burned a wart off of her finger. And I remember her coming home from the wart place where they had burned the wart off her finger. This is so horrifying. I was like 5 years old and shoving me down to the bed and like shoving the burned stump of the wart like into my face. That was cheap entertainment at our house. What's that? It's my wart. And she would just shove the burning wart stump right into my face, right into my eye. Those were good times at the Emerson household. Here's Tim Riley.
So that's that for that story. Meanwhile, teens are causing more trouble in parks late at night, apparently. They're gathering because of chain letters of violence. They alert themselves on the internet and create what are called flash mobs. These are kids 13 to 17 years old and go to local parks to fight in the dark. One of the prime gathering spots is McCoy Park during daytime hours. It's relatively safe. Innocent people pushing their babies around in strollers. But then at night, it changes. At 10 or 11 o'clock, it starts up at the corner of the park, and then between 50 to 80 teens gather, taunting and fighting one another. It's not simply relegated to one park. It's happening all over the place, including Lloyd Center. Well, that happens during the day at Lloyd Center.
Seriously, at Lloyd Center, I mean, come on. I mean, it's Lloyd Center, at any given time, you just walk through the food court there, and it's like a prison riot.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I've got this breaking news from MSNBC.com. The mayor of Newcastle, Indiana, says
a full-scale riot has broken out at prison.
Yes.
Yeah. Good to know we're on the same page.
Literally. A full-scale riot has broken out at a prison.
Well, if you're in Indiana, what else are there to do, really?
Oh, but it's at a medium security prison.
There's nobody interesting there.
Well, what kind of criminals would be in Indiana anyway? What would they be doing?
A medium security... They removed the tag for the mattress. A medium security facility in Indiana. I don't even really know what that... What is that? Is it, like you're cheating somebody on cornmeal prices or something?
Stole some grits?
Totally.
Hoarded hamburger helper?
Yes, does. Yeah, you're inflating your hominy prices. So there you go. Well, I thought that was going to be interesting. But no, it's a medium security prison in Indiana. Nobody cares, man. Unless it's a maximum security, somewhere where they've got lots of shivs and automatic weapons. I don't really care about it. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Oh, wait a minute, Harris.
Okay.
I just have to... I have a lot of counters.
No,
here.
I'll wait.
Let's do a penis watch.
Here's your... Oh, this is a horrific story.
It is.
Here's your penis watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio
Take
program.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start melting away.
Bow.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
Bow. It comes here from The Sun, which is one of Britain's tabloids.
Is it hot?
It is.
I'm sorry. I'm terrible with that today. This comes to us from The Sun. Ow, ow, ow.
And the headline is, Docs Fight to Save a Man's Willy. Horrified diners watched in shock as a maniac sliced off his manhood in a crowded pizzeria.
Fantastic.
And a 35-year-old native of Poland burst into the ZZ Eatery in central London, grabbed a knife from the kitchen. Then he leapt upon the table, dropped trowel, and customers fled screaming. This is before he did anything. The witness said there was blood everywhere. Everyone ran all over the place. Surgeons battled to save the severed willy. They tried to sew it back on.
Sewing it. You know, I don't want anybody...
This, by the way, is the first willy that's been sewed back on in the U.K., It's a rarity.
Well,
it's not like it's Bulgaria or one of those Romania where people do that for fun on a Saturday night. You know, one of those Dracula-type countries.
Seriously. No, and all of those countries, like, in the
running around with torches in the night because there's no electricity. What else is there to do?
It's true.
Sitting around some dirty old castle that was built 1,000 years ago.
No, it's always in some just hideous backwater country where people are sitting around in a circle praying to small stones or something, and then lumps cut off someone's genitals. All right. Just another Saturday night in Zagreb. All right,
apparently, yeah. they luckily, quick-thinking cops recovered the severed organ from the restaurant floor after subduing its crazed owner with something called CS gas. So the willy was packed in ice and taken with a man to London St. Thomas Hospital.
It's pretty impressive. I think the story continues on
that. Yes, it does.
It's pretty impressive, by the way, that you would need to struggle to subdue him after he had cut off his own penis. I mean, I remember just getting gently nudged in the sack with a soccer ball as a child, and I couldn't move for like an hour and a half. The guy cuts off the whole business, and he still needs to be subdued with gas. That really is an impressive display of virulence.
Page 2. A spokesman confirms doctors had attempted to reattach the willy, but the hospital refused to say whether it was successful. The 200-seat restaurant was packed with runners and spectators. Sales rep Stuart McMahon, who was eating supper with his girlfriend, said,
he's
this
not
guy came
laid.
Running in, then charged into the kitchen, got a massive knife and started waving it about. Everyone was screaming and running out as he jumped on the table, dropped his trousers, and pumped his willy. Then he cut it off. I couldn't believe it. The staff was very upset. Police sped to the scene and restrained and handcuffed the man. Several diners were treated for shock by the ambulance crews.
Imagine having to clean that restaurant. Mm-hmm. Good God Almighty. I think it would be like that thing we were talking about the other week about Indians seeing ships and then not seeing them because they couldn't even fathom it. There's really nothing that can prepare you for a man standing on a table next to you and then cutting off his penis. I mean, there's nothing. There's really no experience that you could have in your life, that would prepare you for that. So there you go. Fantastic. There's your penis watch
penis
for
watch.
Tuesday
Take
on the Rick Emerson Show.
Take a look at my enormous penis. My troubles start melting away.
I just can't get over this Clear Channel memo about how the longest talk break you're ever supposed to do is 20 seconds.
And that's once an hour into a commercial. Can you imagine?
They play 10 minutes of commercials and expect people to hang around.
Can you hang around and hear
the same five songs in a row you play every other hour?
Will you play Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls? I haven't heard that in almost 4 minutes. Can you imagine if we had to hold something to 20 seconds on this show? I don't even get the phone number out in 20 seconds.
That is true.
All right. So there you go. Here's, let's do a couple more and then we'll take Regis. Tim Riley, Dominican
Crew. Sheryl Crow may not practice what she preaches. The Smoking Gun reports a singer who recently rapped her Stop Global Warming college tour. Everybody's getting into the act of these things lately. A rep for Crow tells the New York Post, page 6, that, the singer requires 3 tractor trailers, 4 buses, and 6 cars when she hits the road. And as a part of her conservation efforts, the BBC reported yesterday that Crow has suggested when it comes to toilet paper, people please only use 1 square per restroom visit, except, of course, on those pesky occasions when 2 or 3 could be required, or if you're Rosie O'Donnell.
You know, your ass is immense. Your ass is the size of Gibraltar. She has to have known what a dumb statement that was. I mean, part of me thinks that she couldn't possibly have said that, but the thing is, by now they would have denied it. They would have put out a statement by now, taking it back, that she didn't really make that comment. So they haven't, so she must have really said it. I'm so glad I don't care about the environment because it spares me having to be consistent in my behaviors. You know, so I don't have to be like some Al Gore thing where you're bitching about the, you know, they find out his energy bill is like $600 billion a month or whatever. I'm so glad that I don't care about the earth in any way, so I don't have to, in no way do I have to be consistent.
Well, where you live, the earth is already scorched beyond redemption. Those of us who live in the newer suburbs, we try to separate the newspapers from the rest of the garbage.
It's sort of a reverse gentrification where I live. It's just the mold and broken glass are taking over a sentient life form.
I mean, you'll either dig up skeletons or old bottles if you start digging around that neighborhood.
No, really. It really is true. It's all I can do to remember not to wear my leather pants to the vegan place. All right. It's we'll have to tell that story at some point. It's 503-733-2970, by the way. Because we went to, I might as well just tell it now, then we'll break. We went to, Sarah and Tim and myself all went to that Pirate's Tavern place.
Cause it's delightful.
It really is great. They're a new advertiser.
You need to be a pirate to go.
You don't have to be a pirate, and I will actually take this moment to say that you don't even have to be a vegan, because I clearly am not a vegan. But
you have friends who are.
I have friends.
And they accept you as you are.
I have many friends who are vegan. I have had vegans in my home. I would not wish for my sister to marry one.
Is Laura a vegan right now?
Yeah, she's going through a vegan. She's experimenting. You know how
it's
girls
more
are.
Than a stage.
You know how girls are, Sarah. They go through that stage where they want to be interested in... See, there, I can almost see the joke, too. Vegan... I'm right there. It's like the joke is just 3 or 4 feet away from me.
Oh, I have Bud Collier as Superman in the 40s.
Really?
Yeah.
Anyway, so we all went to this vegan restaurant, which is really great. And I think the biggest testament is, this guy may or may not want me to say this, but the biggest testament to the place is that I don't think I would have known it was vegan. If I had not known it was a vegan restaurant, I think I would have just thought it was a regular, ordinary, run-of-the-mill. It was a great food, but I don't think I would have known that it was vegan if they hadn't pointed it out. And the guy was very cool about it. The guy who runs Pirate's Tavern, it's very much Johnny. It's very much a lot of it for him is that he's an animal rights guy, and he wishes to see animals treated in a certain way and so forth. And so I, of course, because I'm retarded, I didn't think about any of this. And so we all go to dinner. And so there's Tim, and there's Teresa, who's the sales lady in the account. And then there's Sarah, and then there's myself. And I realize with horror at a certain point, about 45 minutes into the meal, I am wearing a leather jacket, leather shoes, a leather belt, and I'm carrying over my shoulder a huge...
The doctor wanted...
I'm wearing over my shoulder a huge leather, like Kenneth Cole briefcase thing. And then the guy comes, and on the front of the menu, there's a big thing about why go vegan. And there's, they're very cool about it. They don't like preach. They don't try to convert everybody into it. But on the front, it says, we here prefer, we don't believe that animals should be killed and eaten and whatever. We think that they should be treated with, respect. I mean, they're very much into the animal rights thing. And I'm sitting there wearing like 400 pounds of leather at the table. And then we go to get the photo taken with the guy later. I felt like such a tool. And I'm just desperately trying to get everything I have that's leather, like, out of the shot. Like, I'm standing, they kept asking me to come stand in the forefront of the picture,
And I kept hiding in the back behind Sarah. And literally, you look at the picture.
Yeah, leather shoes, leather jacket, leather bag.
I had everything. I had more leather than you can possibly. I mean, I really looked like I was just like I was headed to the Tenderloin. I had everything leather you could possibly imagine. And I'm hiding in the back of the photo, so all you can see is like from my eyes to my upper lip.
I've been busy all day slaughtering the neighborhood animals.
That's exactly what it looked like.
I didn't have enough money to kill any raccoons, but I will have a coonskin cap next time I attend.
And I look like I just got off the job at Spartacus. Why, hello! You know, and the car, and the guy's like, and the guy keeps saying, hey, why don't you come down front, Rick? We can barely see him. I'm like, no, it's fine. I'm back here. So, Jesus, God, except I look like Daniel Boone. Oh, God damn. All right, it's 503-733-2970.
I have Bud Collier as Superman.
Oh, really? Let's play that now, and then we'll break. Okay, let's see here. Is the pot up?
It's a little strange that Dr. Wan didn't tell you why he wanted to see you, Mr. White.
Not if you know Orientals, Kent. They don't say much over the telephone. It's an instrument of the devil, and they don't trust it.
Oh, but surely Dr. Wan doesn't feel that way.
Okay, really?
Did
we pre-screen this?
Yes, but the Chinese have certain
I'm just going to jump the last part of that.
That is a product of its time, from the 40s.
Probably during the war years. I dumped the last part of that. Really?
Yeah, that was fairly common.
Is that a CBS product?
It was back then. Well, we did have Imus. And Bud Collier was not disciplined, per se. He was just reading what the writers put in front of him.
No.
There were certain feelings about people from that side of the world during that period of time.
No, it's true. It's true. I just didn't really anticipate that. Was that a Superman?
Yes.
Cartoon?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yes.
Was it animated? It was an animated thing, or was it a live action thing?
Let's see.
Or was it a radio play?
I believe this was from the radio.
Jesus. You just don't really expect. I dumped the latter part of that because it was just too much. You don't really expect to hear things like, well, you know.
Why don't you just go to an Edson Columbus mini? You can still hear them.
You know,
go to the suburbs. Go down to McMinnville or something like that.
In the latter days of that Imus scandal, was that last week or the week before? Must have been 2 weeks ago because it was the killing last week. In the latter days of that Imus scandal, I had a bunch of people send me copies on YouTube. Or YouTube, of that that Bugs Bunny cartoon, where it's Bugs Bunny fighting the Japanese,
mm-hmm.
And it's it's just so unbelievably racist.
Right.
It's just so unbelievably stereotypical.
Well, most of these cartoons were removed a long time ago. You have to watch Cartoon Alley on Saturday morning on TCM to see them again.
Have you ever seen that Disney cartoon that has Donald Duck dressed as a Nazi?
I have, yes.
It's real. It's kind of creepy, and it's kind of cool, actually, in a weird way, because Donald Duck, I always get them confused, yes, it's Donald Duck, who is having this dream, and it's a World War II cartoon, it's a propaganda film from World War II, and that's what we'll break after this, it's a propaganda cartoon from World War II, and Donald Duck is having this dream. It sounds so weird to even say this, that he's been conscripted into the Third Reich.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, it's like a terrible nightmare, and he wakes up and he realizes, like, or whatever Donald Duck says, and he realizes he's got to redouble his efforts to help the Americans win the war, and he goes to the assembly line, and he starts making bombs or whatever to kill Germans, and that's the happy ending. But the first two-thirds of this cartoon is Donald Duck having this fever dream nightmare that he has been drafted into the Nazi army, and at the end, I think he actually runs into Adolf Hitler. But most of the cartoon consists of Donald Duck, I swear to God, prancing around in a Nazi uniform. It's the weirdest thing. You watch it now, and your brain can't even accept it, that you're seeing Donald Duck dressed up as a Nazi. You'll see it online, and it looks like a Photoshop, but it's not as real. It's the strangest thing.
Right. And most of the cartoons from that era had something like that.
Oh, they
don't play them anymore.
No, they just had terribly racist overtones, a lot of them. So, is it true that they're censoring Speedy Gonzalez cartoons now?
Probably.
See, that's just stupid. You know, because all of those cartoons, those Speedy Gonzalez cartoons, those are allegories for Speedy Gonzalez putting one over on the white man.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally what those are. Speedy Gonzalez sticking it to Whitey. And I think we can all stand up for that. We can all stand up for sticking it to Whitey.
I can't stand Whitey.
Whitey is the problem.
Yes.
We should take a break here. I'm just going to excerpt that tip right of the thing. I can't stand Whitey. Really, who can? All right. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Rick? Oh, they don't even have time to read this. All right, back after this. Don't never trust Whitey. All right, back after the Rick Emerson Show continues next. You said I can't speak to that, sir. I don't have access to that information at this time. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll talk to Sherry, get some more of your calls here in a few. Jim, why? Riley will return from the Ministry of Truth a little later on. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from New York City. CNN radio correspondent, Steve Kastenbaum. Hello, sir, how are you?
Great, good to be back.
Thank you. Were you gone?
Good to be back on your show.
Ah, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
I wish that I was Jim Roop. I heard he had a fantastic time at the listener party.
Well, you know, everybody everywhere wishes they were Jim Roop for many, many dozens of reasons. Usually, most of which have nothing to do with us. It's just because Jim Roop is Jim Roop. So
yeah,
there you go.
Well,
you live in New York, so every night is a party in New York, my friend.
Yeah, when you have to be up at 5:30 in the morning, though, you don't get to go to many of them.
I suppose that's true. Russell Simmons is he selling something? Has he got something to promote? Because he seems to be being interviewed a lot of places recently, and he's sort of trying to pass it off as public activism. But is he out there shilling something right now?
It's really funny you mention that because I was watching him this morning on CNN's American Morning, and before he talked about banning these three words from rap songs on the radio. He was talking about a book that he has out now.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
And what is the book?
It's all about, achieving your goals and making your dreams come true and that sort of thing from the aspect of being an African-American male in the U.S.
Well, I mean, you know, you can never take away from Russell Simmons, the fact that he co-founded Def Jam Records, which is, you know, one of the, but still, to this day, more than almost 30 years later, the world's premier hip-hop record label. He founded that with Rick Rubin, and of course, has proven to have a real Midas touch with some of these things. Boy, but, man, I saw him on the Colbert Report last night. I think he was either last night or the night before. Boy, he came off as just not the brightest guy in the world, though. And maybe he's one of those guys that has a real good business sense, a strong business savvy, but just does not communicate well in person because he just came off like a massive tool. I mean, there's just no other way to say it. I mean, he just came off as an ass.
Well, he definitely knows what he's doing business-wise. I mean, he has his hand in everything now, you know. Besides for music, you know, there's TV shows, there's clothing lines,
yep.
There's electronics. Yeah, it's incredible. How much of a business he's grown from nothing, you know?
And so he's on this kick, which we seem to do about every 10 years in this country. The last person who did this was C. Dolores Tucker, who got her knickers in an uproar about this in like 94, 95, during the Death Row Records heyday.
Right.
And so Russell Simmons, all of this business of the three words, which I believe are what I'm now apparently legally required to call the H word. The N-word and the B. I can't believe I got to talk like I'm a 5-year-old. Really, but I mean, does this mean that the Def Jam Records is somehow going to grow a public conscience about these things and not release these words, or is he just sort of mouthing this about how they're not going to be broadcast on the radio?
Well, here's what he's saying. He says that, and I'll let him say it. He's that the record labels should have some sort of uniformity when it comes to releasing those what they call those radio safe edits for the songs. He's basically saying, you know, that these three words should just not be included anymore. And here he is.
I think that the public airwaves and the people who are listening to mainstream radio and television deserve to hear language that they expect or they don't need to hear these words.
What was really interesting to me was that he said he doesn't want his own kid hearing those words. But I've never heard him say that before, though.
Well, and I've never heard Russell Simmons express any concerns or complaints about the myriad times that all those words appear on the products that he sells and that pay his kids' tuition.
Well, it's funny you mention that because he went on to say,
they have a right to use their poetic license. They are supposed to use whatever words inspire them or tell the story they're telling. And we're supposed to protect those rights. But at the same time, we should protect the ears of the young ones and the people who are not interested in that language or anything.
You know, seriously, it's as though people somehow forgot how to use their fingers and to change the channel when they hear something they don't like, or as though children suddenly started being manufactured out of glass.
Well, he said that, too. He said, you know, if you don't like it, you know, we should vote against it by turning off the radio and not buying the CDs.
Yeah, well, it does, I got to tell you, I'm old enough, I'm 34, I'm old enough that I grew up, I spent a good bulk of my teenage years and certainly a good part of my young adult years listening to music put out by people among whom were Rick Rubin and Russell Simmons and Def Jam Records. And I got to say that I'm probably no worse to wear for it. And this is kind of the freaky thing to me, if I may put forward a slice of personal philosophy. The thing that's really unnerving about this to me is, A, just that Russell Simmons is just doing such, it's such pandering. It's just such crap. For him, to, you know, I know that they're divorced now, but man, Kimora Lee, who is his wife of the very recently, I saw them on Biography, and I swear to God, she's using a BlackBerry that has diamonds for buttons. It's a gold-covered BlackBerry with diamond buttons.
Are you serious?
Seriously. I mean, it sounds like a joke. It sounds like I'm saying, you know, like a diamond car with platinum wheels, but it isn't really. It's a gold BlackBerry with, it wasn't just diamonds, it was like diamonds and rubies, and it was all precious stones for the buttons. You know, for that guy to now get in front of a camera because he wants to sell his book and just peddle this swill that he somehow doesn't think those words ought to be heard, when teenagers and young adults form, if not the majority, certainly a bulk of his purchasing audience and the audience for hip-hop, just reeks of just the most ridiculous kind of hypocrisy. And not only that, the kind of unnerving thing about it to me is that you have the FCC, which just jams these ridiculous, unenforceable, unintelligible, completely inexplicable, and I mean that literally, they cannot be explicated, rules for broadcasting down broadcasters' throats, and they just do that so long that eventually you just start censoring yourself. And if he really does mean what he says, then it's kind of frightening because it means that Russell Simmons believes then that everybody should just start censoring themselves to an even greater degree than the government already does. So it's just, and it's, here's, it just, and I know that this is just sort of me just babbling on, but let me say that, make this final observation. This is triply hypocritical and disingenuous of Russell Simmons because he knows very well that most urban or hip-hop-oriented radio stations already bleep out all of these words. So he's providing a solution to a problem that doesn't exist because he knows that radio stations, especially in the wake of this whole IMUS nonsense, the radio stations are going to be voluntarily bleeping those things anyway. So, I mean, it really is like he's, you know, it really is a big example of closing the door after the barn, you know, the thing with the horse and then it's gone or whatever. So,
well, it's really interesting because, you know, how long has he been producing records that had this language in it?
1984, I think.
Yeah, and now is when, you know, I mean, was it because, you know, he finally realized what was going on after IMUS? You know, maybe he did realize that, you know, hey, what we're doing here isn't so great.
It,
I don't know.
It seems like if Russell Simmons really believed that, then he would say that the people on Def Jam Records were no longer going to use those words.
Right.
You know, and so, anyway. And just the whole thing, just the guy just screams. And he's certainly not alone in the business community, but he's the guy we're talking about today. And everything this guy does on this issue just screams of opportunism to me. I mean, it just does seem like mindless mouthing. And I really have a problem. I don't know. I really have a problem with a guy whose solution is to limit the number of type of words that he thinks people ought to be allowed to use.
Did you hear what Reverend Sharpton wants to do about this? And I'll make it quick.
Oh, I can hardly wait, because you know that every... I don't know. Does it... I don't know if I'm just reining myself in. No, what does Al Sharpton, who I liked up until about 3 weeks ago, what does he want to do about this?
He wants to, through his organization, raise money to buy stock in the parent companies of record labels so that he can attend shareholder meetings and complain about the language in rap and hip-hop lyrics.
I got to tell you, I think the shelf life in America giving a good goddamn what Al Sharpton wants to complain about, I think that day is coming to an end. Mm-hmm. I think the shelf life on anybody anywhere giving a rodent's rump about what that guy thinks about anything, I think those days are drawing to a close, my friend. There is a phrase called overplaying one's hand. and as we said like 10,000 times 2 weeks ago, you know, it's not in any way to defend whatever Don Imus was saying or whatever he got blown out for. But I do think that there is a general gut sense in the American population that there was a drastically disproportionate response to everything. And furthermore, and to be more blunt about it, just a generalized feeling that Al Sharpton's a jackass. So, you know, that guy can go on and babble about it. But I think the time of us caring has passed. That would just be my editorial opinion on the Steve Castamont.
Okay.
All right, there you go. I'm sure you're going to be here on the receiving end of just a big rant, but
I enjoy listening to the show. I'm glad you pull me in and I get to hear this stuff.
You know, we do podcast, my friend, using today's cutting-edge internet technology.
Okay. I'll have to check that out when I'm not on.
All right. Thank you, sir. Steve Katzenbaum in New York City, my friend.
Thanks.
All right, there you go. Steve Katzenbaum. Fantastic. There you go. I hate that bitch about that, but come on. God damn. Let's see. Sherry, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hi, Rick.
Hey.
I was calling to let you know, and I'm not making this up. I don't have the ad in front of me, but Fred Meyer has WKRP on DVD season one for $30.
You know, somebody else told me about this. They emailed me and said that WKRP was out on DVD, and I didn't know if it was true. And the reason, of course, that would be significant is because that show has been held up for like 10 years because of the music licensing rights.
I know, and I remember you saying that you thought they'd probably never release it, so I was kind of glad that I was able to sort of somewhat prove you wrong in a happy fashion.
I wonder if, I hope that they were able to do it without sacrificing the music, because sometimes the solution for these shows, like if you watch WKRP in syndication, you'll hear, it's so horrible, you'll hear Johnny Fever say, here's some Jimi Hendrix, and then it's like just like really bad, obvious like studio music,
right.
And it's just like generic whatever. I hope they were able to keep a lot of the original music.
Yeah, I didn't know if you were aware of it or not, and I thought, oh God, I got to tell Rick,
Fantastic, Sherry. Well, I'm glad that we have what they call top of mind awareness with you.
Yeah,
so.
No doubt. Oh, one other thing. I don't know if Tim is in earshot or not, but
I don't know, Tim.
Yes, I'm within earshot.
He's
right there.
Good. I just wanted him to know, I'm sorry, I owe him a hug. I didn't get to give him a hug at the listener party. Mm-hmm. Just so he doesn't feel unappreciated.
Let's line up hundreds of people who owe Tim hugs.
Well, I mean, I hugged you several times, and then you accused me of stalking you, which maybe I was. Who knows?
I meant the happy stalking.
I'll do it for children.
Yeah, well, I do the happy stalking.
All right. All right, Angela, well, thank you. Thank you, Sherry.
Sure, no problem.
All right, there you go. That's Sherry. Fantastic. All right. 503-733-2970. On a very special Rick Emerson show, Tim Riley learns to hug. Just the look of palpable, horror that just flashed across your face. All right. We should break. We'll come back. What the hell else? We got this awful Portland song. We'll do that after Tim. We'll come back. More the Ministry of Truth, and then we'll play this terrible Portland song. 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. You say that. Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. Just a moment. We'll visit the Ministry of Truth. Then we'll, let me put the story in front of me so I don't forget it. The story for about the, listen for the Oregonian. We're looking for a Portland's official anthem. I'm going to ruin the surprise for you right now. It's terrible. It's among the worst things you'll hear this week. Russ, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick, how's it going?
What's up?
And hello to Sarah and Tim as well. Interesting, you mentioned the WKRP DVDs. I was searching on the web a couple weeks back, and there was some chatter on Amazon stating that, yeah, they're coming out with different music dubbed in.
Apparently they've cut whole scenes out of some of the episodes if they couldn't get the music.
Not only that, but Howard Hessman went in years ago and they were going to release it on Nick at Night, and he recorded some overdubs for that same purpose. However, there was a site, I don't have the name of it with me right now, but I was able to get 18 DVDs of the entire WKRP series uncut.
Now, I certainly wouldn't know anything about that, and I certainly don't already own that DVD set online that I bought from... I do own it.
Okay.
My friend... No, I totally appreciate you mentioning it, but I don't think I've mentioned this before, but my a colleague of mine, who I guess I won't identify, who worked over at the Coin Tower... She's like, hey, have you been to this auction site? And she gave me the name of the site. She's like, they have the entire WKRP series there, the original from television on DVD. It's like 18 discs for like $30. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm all over that. And I bought it, and it was as advertised, and I'm about halfway through the series. Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing that disappointed me, but not that much, was that you can tell it's not DVD quality. It's dubbed from tape.
It's off VHS from television. Yeah, but it's unaltered, unedited, no commercials. Yeah.
That's what I want.
And I would totally buy it. I would pay for it on DVD if they were not screwing me, if they were putting the actual music on it. Because, the show about a radio station, and then they're just having all this terrible, and it's a rock station, and
right.
Having all this terrible generic music, that's just wrong. I'm just not going to pay for that.
Well, exactly, and it just kind of takes, it's not based on reality anyway, but it even takes more of that element away.
You know who's to blame for this, sir?
Oh, do tell.
Whitey.
Don't never trust Whitey.
That's exactly what I'm saying, sir. That's
right.
If you learn one thing today, it's not to trust Whitey. Thank you, Ross.
You bet.
All right, there you go. Don't never trust Whitey. 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, he is your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Well, apparently it is for sale on Amazon.com.
The BRP?
First season.
Yeah, I'm going to skip it, though, because, again, they're just stripping it out and replacing it with a bunch of generic studio-like production music. Yeah, I'm going to avoid
it. It says,
that.
Despite its substitutions and omissions, I've always loved the show, so apparently they really butchered this thing.
Yeah, no, I guess somebody said that when there were scenes that were music-related but they couldn't get the rights, they actually just cut whole scenes out of the show.
Removing the song changes and typically destroys the original dramatic and comic impact of those scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's just retarded. I'm not gonna contribute to that. Oh, but I will play this for you, Tim. We have somebody, here, we got this.
Look, the Nazi submarine is rising clear of the water.
It is incredible. Look, underneath the submarine, holding it in his hands, Superman.
Superman again? I must say,
yes,
that's better.
It's Superman. Oh, thank heaven.
I cannot believe. All right, Commander, just give me that gun. Come on, you two, Hunt.
So is that Bud Collier there?
Yep. Thank heavens you've come.
Yes, I know. It's the wife, Dr. Cameron.
That totally sounds like Bruce Agler. Oh, my God.
You got to watch him on these TV. It's Bruce Agler doing TV.
Bud Collier, he is Bruce Agler. He is Superman.
Thank heavens you've come.
Yes, I know. It's the wife, Dr. Cameron. Bring Jimmy up.
Didn't I hit it?
Totally. You got to try to hear IDs. Closer to the top of the hour.
Bring Jimmy up on deck. Yes, of course, right away. Come on,
man. Yes, come on.
Bring him in my office after the show.
While they're getting Jimmy, I'll take care of the commander and his aide. First, the commander. Come here, you. Come on. Now, you two students.
Get me down.
I'm going to drop you down through your own conning tower, commander.
This sounds so much like our old program director. And Ryan Jennings is going to be in town this afternoon. We're all going to go to lunch.
To land inside your summit advisor enough to show your nose outside of it again until we reach the American naval base I have in mind. Better take it easy with the boy, Superman. He's in a bad way. I can see that. I'll handle him gently. I'm going to drop that Nazi U-boat off at an American naval base about 600 miles from here. There must be a surgeon there who can take care of Jimmy.
There's a big finish coming up here, I think.
Very low, I'm afraid.
I mustn't waste time, then.
This is pretty fast-moving dialogue for being like 100 years old.
The commander shot him and he fell into the ocean.
Well,
he's below us somewhere. Is there anything you can do about him?
I'm afraid not. I know. Jimmy, doctor.
I'm afraid not. To go to the coasting
table. That was a big show on the visual network.
You have to look for him. Now I must go. Up, and away!
To the casino!
With the quickly ebbing life of Jimmy Olsen, well, we'll know in tomorrow's episode.
Oh, that's so great! That really does sound like Bruce. That's fantastic. Yep.
That was from the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That really
Superman was not on CBS. It was on Mutual.
That really is great. Well done. Thank you for that. Bruce sent us that. Thank you, Bruce.
God bless you.
All right. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
Oh, we're doing the news?
I think so. All right. Yes, we are.
Tim Riley. Well, investigators are trying to figure out who's behind dozens of threatening letters postmarked in Portland that were sent to television stations and in some cases contained a harmful pottery substance. The FBI in Portland under the watchful eye of Beth Ann Steele, who we haven't heard from in a while.
Beth Ann Steele, oh my God.
Yep. Included threats and complained about television coverage of collegiate football and basketball cheerleaders. The first batch was sent in September 2004, had postmarks from Salem. Then more batches were delivered between November 2006 and February 2007. Those postmarks are from Seattle. Maybe they moved.
I forgot all about Beth Ann Steele. Yeah. Beth Ann Steele, what does she even do? I've forgotten.
She's the head of the FBI here.
Is that right?
She's the liaison.
She's the. I guess you are the newsman. She's the Portland liaison for the FBI.
Yeah.
Because we used to have her on a lot in the days immediately following 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot all about that. I can't remember if she was hot. I'm just going to assume that she was hot.
You could more than likely assume so.
Yeah. All right.
Meanwhile, the other top national story, the brother of slain Army Ranger Pat Tillman accuses the U.S. military commanders of committing deliberate and calculated lies and intentional falsehoods. At a U.S. House hearing today, an emotional Kevin Tillman said the initial investigations into his brother's death amounted to utter fiction.
Crucial evidence was destroyed, including Pat's uniform, equipment, and notebooks. The autopsy was not done in accordance to regulation, and the field hospital report was falsified.
It was a deliberate cover-up of his brother's death.
Because we believe this narrative was intended to deceive the family, but more importantly, to deceive the American public. Pat's death was clearly the result of fratricide. It was due to a series of careless actions by several individuals in our own platoon after a small harassing ambush.
So we already know that he was killed by friendly fire, right? That we know.
Right.
This is just now a question of whether the government covered it up, which they clearly did.
You're right. And now we have Jessica Lynch. Remember her? She was that other Army hero?
Yeah.
Well, she said she was there, too. She said her capture and rescue...
She's everywhere.
Interac was exaggerated and glorified.
At my parents' home in Work County, West Virginia. It was understaged by media, all repeating the story of the little girl Rambo from the hills of West Virginia who went down fighting. It was not true.
Remember they interviewed her mother at the factory saying...
She has amnesia.
No, it was like, but before that, she goes, I mean, what kind of upbringing... Could she have to become such a war hero? And the mother answered, it's because it's in the genes.
Yeah, of course. So we know the government's lying about the Pat Tillman thing because that's what they do. The government, they lie about things.
She doesn't understand why her story was exaggerated or glorified. We all know.
I'm still confused as to why they chose to lie and tried to make me a legend when the real heroes of my fellow soldiers that day were legendary.
It's sort of bizarre that Jessica Lynch is being allowed to talk about this publicly.
Yeah.
I guess it's because everybody's sort of forgotten. I mean, everybody's sort of forgotten the original story, maybe. Or they've forgotten the very...
Daryl Worley hasn't.
Thank you. Thanks so much. You know, can I just tell you this? I may have mentioned this on the air. And then this call says, quick info for Tim Riley. I never did this because it would be wrong. But, you know, we had a sister station that plays this hideous song by this pinhead redneck, this guy, Daryl Worley, who, to the best of my knowledge, I may be wrong, has no military experience, but it sings a bunch of songs to get us all fired up to go kill folks. And he has this song called...
Well, we are Americans.
That's what we do. It's really that. We just export. It's all we export is McDonald's and Levi Strauss and killing. But he has a song called Have You Forgotten, in which he rhymes forgotten with Bin Laden.
Mm-hmm.
And the chorus is just the worst. It's just the most retarded song you've ever heard. And but it's like 2.5 minutes of like reminding us all about 9/11 because we'd forgotten. And then he says, you tell me we don't need to worry about Bin Laden. Da-da-da-da-dum. Have you forgotten? I was so tempted to isolate all of those sound clips we've got of George W. Bush himself saying that he no longer cared about Bin Laden and just to layer them in over all the instrumental breaks in that song and just stick it back in the system. Or just sort of silently slip it back in there. I never did, because that would be wrong. But boy, goddamn, was that tempting. Tom, hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, how you doing?
What's up?
Glad to hear that Tim is keeping us abreast of the utter facts. I also have one more word for Tim. Here it comes. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right. Booger.
Thank you, sir. Okay.
Did he fall off some furniture or something?
I don't really know where we're going with that.
He sounded like he had full intentions to play something for you.
I wonder if that went badly. I wonder if that was supposed to sound like something.
And I know how that feels. All the planning in the world goes into something. And then when it's showtime, you just fall flat on your face. And it was all for nothing.
Hit that big green button and nothing happens.
All for nothing.
All right. There you go. Well, let's do one more here, and then I'll play this hideous song.
Pat Tillman's mother, Mary, said the war is not a John Wayne movie, and she has some tough words for the Pentagon.
To write these glorious tales
is really a disservice to the nation. And the nation needs to realize this is an ugly war. Everyone should be part of it. Everyone should understand what's going on. And we shouldn't be allowed to have smoke screens thrown in our face.
That's no kind of American talk. All right. Well, there you go.
Well, the media's always lying.
A bunch of bastards. Stupid media. Are we part of the mainstream media or not?
No, we are not.
I didn't think so. Thanks for clearing that up. I wasn't sure. All right.
It never will be, for that matter.
From the actual mainstream media, the Oregonian, whose building is tall and gothic, we have this. I'm not going to pretend this is breaking news. This is from April 10th.
Well, it can't be. It's from a newspaper. Although every news crew in town will run around covering the story for the 6 o'clock news and stand on roads where accidents happened, you know, 2 or 3 days ago.
It really is true. I never would have thought about that. That nothing in a paper can really be new. It's really not a new paper. It's really an old paper.
Right.
I'm going to start saying that from now on. The Oregonian, our finest old paper. That's mine right there. I'm calling that. Old paper.
It's all yours.
This is from the Metro Northwest section. I guess it doesn't really matter how old it is then, because it's not really timely anyway. Let's see. Is this a sound idea for Portland? Says this article by Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. Sure. Do you ever read things that are just so badly done that you just want to pound tenpenny nails into your ears? Sure, Portland is a great town, but can you dance to it? That's pretty.
What does that mean?
It means that it was deadline time and they couldn't find anybody else to write this, so it fell to Anna Griffin, who I think just opened up a 1001 journalistic cliches book. Anyway, that's pretty much the question City Commissioner Randy Leonard asked this weekend on the political blog blahblahblahblahblah.com. A constituent emailed Leonard, a blues lover, with a song that he and some buddies wrote. You know, this is Portland. You should not. You shouldn't be singing to or listening to or writing or performing the blues. Especially not during the day. In a park. While eating snow cones. He wanted to know whether Leonard and his City Hall colleagues might consider making his tune Portland's official anthem. Rose City is a brassy funk composition with an impressive saxophone solo.
Really?
Mm-hmm. The submission prompted Leonard to start a wider debate. The City of Roses has an official flower. Who knows what it is? Sarah?
I don't know the rose.
The rose.
Hey, see, I was hoping you wouldn't know. And then I would be all like, haha. Yeah, the rose. The thing is, I wouldn't have known. The bird, what is the blue? What is
well,
the
it sounds like a trick question.
What is the official bird of Portland?
The bird? Canadian goose?
Some kind of warbler?
The blue heron. A flag? A slogan?
Oh, those are the things that look like those dinosaur birds.
Yes. And a seal. Is there...
Is that a bird?
No, it's a thing that...
Is that official water?
It's a thing that balances a ball on its nose. Is there a tune that comes close to capturing our essence? Blah, 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 blah. And then she does name-check that Portland, Oregon song that Loretta Lynn and Jack White did. But of course, the reason they just missed that Portland, Oregon song by Loretta Lynn is not being appropriate is because it's all about drinking slow gin. Because it's all about boozing. Because God knows you don't want to have a song about Portland, Oregon that mentions alcohol or anything fun in any way. Anything enjoyable. What else do we
have? Have you heard this song?
I listened to about 10 seconds of it. Apparently, there's a song called Portlandia by some fourth graders at Chapman Elementary School. Let's see. And then it just ends with nothing. This is one of those articles that just peters out with no... there's no, like, please to contribute, please do something. Anyway.
Well, I think you're trying to shrink the size of the paper anyway. Yeah.
Mission accomplished. Done and done. So here's this song, and this is by... Who did this? This is from... They don't even give the guy his name. They don't even give the guy's name.
I thought you said his band name.
Are you kidding me? They don't even give the guy's name. Listen to this. Portland is a great town, but can you dance to it? That's pretty much the question City Commissioner Randy Leonard asked this weekend on a political blog. A constituent, that's what like when they call us, a local radio station. A constituent emailed Leonard, a blues lover, with some songs he and buddies wrote. He wanted to know whether Leonard and his City Hall colleagues might consider making Portland's official anthem. Rose City is a brassy funk composition with an impressive saxophone solo. At no point did they identify the name of the artist. I'm looking for the whole article. They never say who the guy is. Well done, Anna Griffin. That's journalism at its finest right there. Carl Bernstein would be proud. All right, so listen to this. So who wants to hear the song?
Me.
Okay.
Me.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the song. I'm not making this up. This is the song, Rose City, that I guess Randy Leonard or whoever was thinking about making Portland's official song. I swear to God. And you'll know it's bad 4 seconds
in. Is this
in.
The official song yet?
No, I don't think so. I don't think we have an official song. That's the thing. I don't think there is one, but I think this is... maybe this is the... I think the Randy Leonard is somehow, like, pitching this one to be the song. So this is... You'll know it's terrible as soon as you hear the saxophone and you just start picturing Harry Hamlin clutching an attaché. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Suck.
I've traveled across this nation.
How much do you want to bet this is the whitest man you've ever seen in your life?
Is this about the Wicks house?
Yeah. This, I mean, come on.
I look like Michael Bolton.
I do not celebrate the catalog of whoever this is.
I've traveled across this nation.
Oh, I wish I was dead and deaf.
And I've been from town to town.
Mad rhyme coming.
Every place has got a story. He would save and put him down. From the streets of New York City to the hills of Hollywood, there is one place I return to. Got a mountain in the hood. Rose City, make my home in Portland.
Oh, yeah. You know the guys who listen to this? Bald, gray ponytail.
Oh, totally.
Totally the gray, bald ponytail.
Maybe they can sell it at Starbucks.
Getting their news from Rebecca Webb. Pardon me, where can I buy a pound of brie? Boy, do I hate funk.
There's a river runs out through it. There is magic in the air. James Brown had a field day. Cause they've got them bridges. Rose City, make my home in Portland. Rose City,
not even halfway done with this song. Oh, I bet there's
a
like
city
a...
city by any other name wouldn't be as sweet.
Yeah, I bet there's
I'm already bored.
There's
I kind of spaced out, too.
I bet there's either like a big middle eight coming up or just like a terrible, like a bad Tower of Power-esque brass break coming up. Middle eight. I think Trey Parker may be behind us. Oh. It's like ferrets are eating my intestines.
That's very 70.
Oh, God. Scott, you just type on the screen, I hate people in huge letters. Well done, Scotty. Stop clocking all that. I hope that no one outside Portland has ever heard this. What if people in other cities are hearing this and thinking
so
this is
awesome.
Our song? Really, what can compete with this? I'm just going to turn this down.
Maybe we can convince Vancouver to buy it and just change the title a bit.
Vancouver! Mm-hmm.
That works.
Because they're always
living
complaining.
Near a strip mall.
They're always complaining. They never get any respect.
Vancouver! Neighbor stole my car!
Or Troutdale. If it's Vancouver, if they don't find out, we're going to sell it to Troutdale. Then they'll wish they picked it up.
Vancouver, brother runs a mess lab. Jeremy, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, I'm just wondering how long till Kink adds that as a power.
Oh, about 5 minutes ago, probably. you know it's true. And you know those guys will be playing for 20,000 white people by some boats this summer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the request line's already lighting up.
Yeah, thank you. That's Jeremy.
That's so bad. I just can't get... And now it's stuck in my head, which is the worst thing.
Jeff, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello there.
That's so weird. You got one of your engineers on right before the other one.
Oh, wait. Oh, was that Jeff? Was that Jeremy the engineer?
Yeah, that was Jeremy the engineer. Now this is Jeff, your chief engineer.
Oh, hello, Jeff. How are you?
Hi. You know what a bald guy with a great ponytail is called, right?
No.
Skullet.
A skullet. All right. Can't you hear this playing like it's some sort of a wine and cheese tasting thing?
That's going to be the theme song of Blues Fest 2007. Oh. I can already see it when I work the Kink booth this year.
And you know that it's going to be like special guest. It's a special guest whose name they don't even put in the goddamn article. I read the entire article. They don't name. I mean, as much as that's a terrible song, they don't even name who did this.
Yeah.
I guess that's probably for the best.
All right.
All right. Thank you, sir. Jeff.
Bye, Jeff.
All right. Well, we should break, but when we come back, Jeff number two, I see another Jeff on hold. Jeff on line two. Stay there, because I'm curious about that, actually. So don't you want to know what I'm talking about? Don't you want to know what I'm so curious about? Does it drive you crazy? This should be Portland's official song. Our official song should be something by Dio. Come on, how great would it be if this was our official... We ought to totally push for Dio to sing our official song.
I bet we could get him.
Oh, as soon as I said, and that's when he hangs up. Fine, dick. I didn't want to talk about your comment anyway. All right, back after this is the Rick Emerson Show. You stay there. Tired of that. As opposed to the Rogue City song, which I am already tired of.
Yeah, I could go without hearing that again.
Oh, we're going to play it at least one.
I know.
Hi, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. Listen to this, Rick. About that song, it's not cool, dude. Even the average white band thinks it's bad. Not even one mention of a strip bar. That's the other thing. It's like they name all of this crap that doesn't really... I mean, I guess technically, like, yeah, it's okay. Ha ha, the rain. It rains a lot. Ha ha, umbrella. But there's that thing about James Brown having a field day here. I mean, I guess maybe James Brown played here once or something. Rick, I guarantee they'll play the crap out of that song at the Rose Festival this year. One more reason not to go. Amen.
I've never been to the Rose Festival.
Me either. I know that we're supposed to go because it's our civic duty or whatever, but screw that. Rick, I can picture the Rose City song blasting from Scotty J's monster truck. Steve, yeah, I did. Me too, by the way. Let's see. What else do we have here? Well, I'm getting all of these. Rick, I play in a local blues band, and that song sucks. However, you are correct that they will be ushered into the spotlight at the Blues Fest. Randy Leonard must be a wannabe harp player, and they promised him he could sit in with the band. Oh, you know that's true. You know, just a balding white man who's going to get up there and jam on the harmonica.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
In like a loose-fitting Hawaiian shirt.
House of Blues style. Oh, totally,
and
totally,
papered,
totally.
Like, light denim jeans.
Why do you say such things? And I know it's true.
It is true. And like, just I get this like furry arms and like some fancy watch and like hip, like purplish, black
round lens sunglasses. Totally, yeah, with the bad Jimmy Buffett mustache. Dear God, you know that's what that is too. That's a whole bunch of people that all look like Jimmy Buffett. Dear God, Rick. I'm just saying, God forbid that a meteor strike a Jimmy Buffett concert one of these days, and we're just rid of that demographic forever. Dear God, Rick, you would think with all the great contemporary music that Portland produces, our elected officials could put their own personal crappy taste aside and come up with something the rest of the nation won't listen to and think, how lame that city must be. That's the thing. Anybody who hears that in, like, New York... Anybody who hears that in Pennsylvania, anybody who hears that, you know, anywhere where they have ears, will listen to that and think that Portland is the most retarded city on the planet. I mean, who would hear that? Who would hear that sound and say to themselves, by God, Portland must be a fantastic place? So who would hear this Let me just, if I can, just... I have to, just one more time. Just skip forward so you don't have to hear the whole thing. I don't understand who's going to hear this music and immediately come to the conclusion that Portland is, you know, like a real happening place in any way. Let me just...
Hey! It's Saturday Night Live! Featuring Kevin Nealon, Dennis Miller, Nora Dunn. Come on.
Oh, so bad.
And you're totally right about the white man with the harmonicas and the Hawaiian shirt.
I hate it because you can just see them all smiling at each other, having the greatest time of their lives. Best night since
77. Totally. Oh, all right. What are we doing? Rick, I don't know, that email vanished somewhere. 503-733-2970. We'll have more from Tim Riley here in just a skosh. Who is, let's see, this is, oh, they all have pure gray hair, too. Well spotted, Scotty J. Jeff, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
First up, Rick, I want to thank you for changing it from Jeff number two to the second Jeff. I appreciate that.
That's what I do.
Okay, so I've been watching quite a bit of that VH1 Classic station there, and they had, like, top 20 rock and roll anthems.
Yes.
So, you know, have you seen the program there? It's, like, posted by Dee Snider.
I haven't. I mean, I saw Dee Snider do the top 40 hair bands, and I saw Dee Snider do the top 40 power ballads. I have not seen the top 40 anthems. Do you know offhand what the top, like, five were?
Because
I might want to guess.
No, I don't remember, but there was, right. You know, in the anthem range, when I hear the word anthem, you know, I'm thinking, come on, feel the noise, we're not going to take it, you know, those powerful songs. What the hell was that you guys played?
It's not really, like, fist-pumping music.
It's really not, no. And I thought as I was growing up that Portland's song, which I don't know if you want to call it an anthem, I thought it was Louie Louie.
See, people...
That's what I've been growing up thinking Louie Louie is the Portland song, and I just did that thing with my fingers.
Fantastic. People say that, but I don't think... I mean, I think it's sort of unofficial because it was recorded here, but I don't think it really is the official song of Portland. They tried to do that in Washington State about 15 years ago, too. They tried to make it the official song of Washington, and it didn't work then. I think it's certainly one of the unofficial Portland anthems, but I don't think it's official in any way, no.
So I would lobby that if somebody is going to make a full-on anthem, that somebody, I don't know, pitch in... get Storm Large to do the anthem for Portland. Because only somebody who can really rock it could be entitled to do the anthem.
Well, clearly, someone who can rock, or at the very least, you know, I would settle for not sucking.
Yeah, and has some kind of, like, songwriting skill and or, like, vocal skill.
That's my final note.
Yes.
When you get to your 37th listener party.
Yes, sir.
Listener party 37 in a row.
Well done. Okay, I'll take. We'll do a little. Wait, hold on. Where the hell did my McCarthy Center go? That's a little. Oh, for the love of. Well. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. There you go. I can't do the. I can't do. I can't play Ed McCarthy and this at the same time. Musical guest Huey Lewis. The cheapest joke.
That's pretty damn accurate, though.
Seriously.
You've got to stop playing that, or it's going to be stuck in my head.
Hi, Chuck. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick. I was hoping before they closed that competition on that they let the kid from Whitney High get a shot at it.
Totally.
I was thinking, like, you better come to Portland and look at the river.
Well, I mean, how much worse could it possibly be? Seriously.
And there's a song about Portland that's been out. It was Quarter Flash. There's one called High on Williams Avenue.
Oh, is that true? I kind of missed the Quarter Flash era, so I didn't know that. Is that true?
You didn't miss much. It was kind of there and done.
Okay, fantastic.
Quarter Flash in a pan.
A Quarter Flash in the pan. Wait. All right. Thank you, sir.
All right.
There you go. Fantastic. There you go. Well, you're right. I mean, that guy told...
How awesome would that be to have Storm singing a song about Portland?
Well, or the guy totally nailed it. Just the guy who said that the song needs to be anthemic. Because there is such a cool Portland vibe and, you know, all this. People
and this
are so
is not
easy.
It.
Are you saying this doesn't make you want to stand up and pump your fist, Sarah?
I can see, like,
I can see me killing myself to this.
Oh, I can see like middle-aged yuppies like dancing with their little girls in like some deserted parking lot as the
fat suburban women dancing with their husbands at the Taste of Portland.
Oh man.
Yes, I can see that too, with no trouble at all. Okay, we have to
stop.
Let's go to the beer garden. All right, it's 503-733-2970.
There's nothing wrong with the beer garden.
It's true. The sad thing is that the Rose City song is almost lame enough for that out-of-touch city fathers to vote it as the city song. Thanks for the Dio to take the taste out of my ears. No, it's the least we could do, sir. It's 503-733. I'm just getting all of these. There's just emails that all just say, like, stop it now. It's 503-733-2970. Rick, you bastard. My house is on the market, and that lame anthem just brought down my property values. All right, let's see what else do we have here. This is, all right, well, guys are just, people are just sending me emails now. Just, ow, my brain. Ow. Rick, stop it now. Let's see. Please. Ow. All right, so there you go. You're getting the gist. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Rick, this is Dave in the Coop.
Dave, what's up?
I'm a saxophone player. You've got to stop playing that, please.
Why? Are you saying that this does not do your...
Please.
This does not do your craft the...
Oh, it was terrible.
Wait, hold on for it. Wait.
No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's right, baby.
I knew John Coltrane, and that is no John Coltrane.
Boy, let me just tell you this. I was out having dinner last night, there was a John Coltrane song on the jukebox. It made me want to gouge out my brain with something dull.
Yeah, it must have been from 1966.
It was my favorite things by John Coltrane.
Yeah,
I swear to God, I wanted to take out my head with a melon baller.
All right.
Seriously, just so you know. All right.
Yeah, well, okay, thanks, Rick.
Melon baller.
I barely knew her.
All right, thank you. There you go. That's whoever that was. That's Dave. All right. 503-733-2970. Rick, Jesus God, the song makes me want to move. See, we could get just a bunch of raccoons jumping around on typewriters in a closed room somewhere, and they could pound a... We could just, I could have people random phrases from the audience. I don't even know that it would have to rhyme at this point. So,
well, theirs doesn't really rhyme either.
That's true. All right. Anyway, it's 503-733-2970. This is Rick, pleased to be never playing. And of course, the fact that they don't even bother to identify artists. Rick, I would rather listen to a four-hour loop of Connie Chung than hear five more seconds of that garbage. And this is another one saying, why are they talking about James Brown in a city about Portland? I don't know, in a song about Portland. I don't know. Rick, is that crappy Portland song created by the same people that did the annoying More For You with Kimberly Moss and Andy the Weather Guy in Channel 12 at 9 a.m.? I think it was. It may have been, sir. All right. We should probably break here before we get too far behind.
And I do see a Dennis Pitzenbarger looming about in the hallway.
Well, now I just can't get... like, the Eddie Storm singing a Portland song out of my head. That's the thing.
Well, Stormer, we have a lot of really talented singers.
That's true. We are not short. It's true. We're not short. I mean, really, I'm almost tempted to have one. I'm almost tempted to write one just so we don't have to hear that one. Just a song block that.
Well, because it's not set in stone, right? We could still stop it.
There's still time, Sarah.
Oh.
We could still storm the commissioner's office and burn every last copy.
Jesus God.
Well, all right. We'll talk more when we get back. It's 503-733-2970. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere. I would never say that on the air.
Don't get me in trouble.
I'm not getting anybody in trouble. Rick Emerson respects you.
Don't talk about yourself in the third person.
Rick Emerson smells something really foul. Okay, here's the thing. I don't want to get sidetracked by smell because the audience, that's by definition something they couldn't possibly care less about. It's not Dennis, though. It's not Dennis who has that weird fragrant aroma. It doesn't smell bad as such. It's just strong. I mean, Brian, I've got to tell you, that smells like pure gasoline. Burns the nostrils, and my eyes, actually, and my skin.
Very pungent.
The nostrils. It's not Scotty, because Scotty was in here earlier. I wonder if Scotty has added.
Maybe he reapplied.
Oh, let's find out right now. Hold on. Oh, it doesn't want to play.
No.
Let's. How do I summon Scotty? What can I summon Scotty with?
Third name.
Oh yes. This will be Scotty's. And here's your host, Roseanne Barr. Scotty, what do you mean you can't come in yet?
He's not even on the phone. What is he doing?
He says, I'm on the phone. Scotty, I'm looking. There are no calls, Scotty. This is not a phone segment, Scotty. I know you're not on the phone. Oh, he just put a line on hold to be an ass. You have to come here.
Don't put the hotline on hold, Scotty.
You have to come here. Come here now.
He totally put on cologne. If he's trying not to.
I swear to God, don't make me come back there.
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. You know what else to say, except...
You're not going to amount to jack squat!
Why, hello, Scotty. How are you today? You don't need... I'm right here. You can actually hear me with your ears.
Okay. I'm going to step up right now. It is Scotty.
Okay.
No, it isn't.
It smells like urine in here.
What smells like pee?
It's not true.
You have some sort of smelly good on.
I do, but not like your... And why would it just start...
Because did you reapply? Did you reapply cologne?
Maybe it's his deodorant and he's starting to perspire.
Do you have your deodorant here with you?
No, it's not me.
Scotty, it's totally you.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to walk. Okay, I'll be the arbiter. I've got the largest nose.
I'll stand here.
This nose can sense anything. Hold
by
on.
By standing here, I'm out of the...
Oh, God damn. That's
not me.
I told you.
I got it right when you
walked
in.
What deodorant do you wear?
That's not a cologne. That's deodorant.
Showtime.
That's...
Your Showtime deodorant? What does that mean?
That's what it is.
Does it smell like Eddie Murphy and Robert De Niro?
Does it shape like a cigar?
Yeah. I stole that joke from the low, by the way. That's not a cologne. And we know that you sweat a lot. Scotty, it's you. Three out of three people agree. Scotty J smells like what this room smells like.
How could it be at 2:30 in the afternoon?
I'll tell you exactly how.
8 a.m. in the morning.
Because you just recently started perspiring.
You're
heavily.
Getting a little nervous. That guy with the 900 number keeps pestering you. You're getting a little worked up.
The guy who asks for ass keeps calling you. You are sweating a lot. You're sweating a lot, and as you,
Scotty, in this room, if you smell me out there,
in this room because you're in the room,
buddy. Your forehead's glistening. That means your armpits are wet, which means you're stinking us up.
I mean, that is your cologne. That's your antiperspirant.
Glistening.
You're a little shiny.
No, that would be from the product. Actually.
You're shiny. What do you put on your head? Bacon grease.
How'd you know?
What product do you use on your face?
Well, now I can't think of it, but it comes in a little, it's a pomade type thing, and you can get it at, like, you know,
great, it's a what?
Great Clips.
The what?
It's a like what?
Pomade. Pomade, something
please
like that.
Please be spelling pomade.
P-O-M-E-A-D, I guess.
You're not even trying. You just gave up halfway through.
You really did.
Hey, that photo of you while you're here, by the way, it is you. It's your antiperspirant. It is your underarm antiperspirant, Scotty.
It's impossible.
Which, no, it's you can't just say things are impossible and make it be the case.
Normally be soaking wet under here. If I was sweating, it's not even wet.
It's because it's an antiperspirant. Jesus, God. I know that some of the lingo can be a little complex. Antiperspirant. It's because you're not sweating. It's blocking it. But as you generate sweat and that absorbs it and whatever, and it sort of fizzes away into the ether, that's what it is. It's the smell of your antiperspirant. My throat is now sore. From that. I mean, it's just...
I'm going to smell Dennis.
Okay, you have to... It's not Dennis.
It's not me.
It's not Dennis. And it's not Dennis. Sarah's hair. No. I smelled Sarah's hair during the break. It's not my clothing. Sarah smells of strawberries.
Well, I like to think that 10 hours after the fact of putting on deodorant and, a little bit of Cuba, that it starts, exuding its smell.
Yeah. Well, in any event, what the hell was I saying? Oh, so real quickly, people were asking about the picture of you and the barmaid with the really huge cans.
Yes.
Let's see, perch right up.
Have you been spending
a lot of time in the studio staring, in your room staring at that photo? Because sometimes I walk by your computer on the way to the kitchen and I see you minimize something down to the bottom of the screen really quickly. Are you just staring at that photograph of the barmaid's breasts?
The minimizing that you would see would be me going in between like three different programs at once while I'm waiting for something to download.
I'm just asking. There's no need to be defensive.
I do not have a digital.
Because people have asked to see that photograph.
I know it. And I do not have a digital copy. All I have is a printed Kodak quality.
Now, do you want to get a digital? I mean, are you going to get a digital photograph?
I asked the photographer to send me one, and he's getting the bartender's approval first.
Okay.
But I am having it framed.
Now, what are you going to use it
for? Where are you going to hang it?
I don't know, but I'm having it framed at Beards alongside the Listener Party X.
You're going to have the photo of the barmaid's breasts framed.
Yeah. That's right next to the Listener Party X brochure.
And you're going to get a... What are you going to use the digital one for?
Digital one would be my, like, my... I think they call it a moniker or something like that on MySpace. Whatever your...
Avatar.
Avatar, there you go.
Don't help. Why do people in that chair feel like it? A moniker?
It's like watching a moniker. M-O-N-I-K-A-R.
No.
Close.
What is a moniker?
Oh, that's I don't know. But I know how to use a lot of big words.
But you're going
to
use the photo as one.
I use a lot of big words out of context.
What's a monocle?
Well,
are a monocle
it'll be a single something.
A monocle and a moniker. Is one of those words made up?
Monocle is made up.
Okay.
The monocles of Narnia, that'd be one.
If I said Monopoly, would I be giving away too much?
You know the peanut guy, the Mr. Peanut guy? He wears a top hat.
He's a moniker, right?
He's a what?
I don't know.
What is a moniker?
He's a monk.
What is a moniker?
I don't know.
What is an avatar?
An avatar is like if you're playing poker at like Full Tilt Poker.
All right, I should have known that you'd know that when
that's
through
your
video
picture.
Poker or through online poker. Spell avatar, please.
A-V-A-T-E-R.
No. Well, you're really like 0%.
I hate spelling out loud. If I write stuff down, put it on the computer, spell check it, I get through life.
Okay,
Emerson.
You really do have to leave the room. It's just becoming...
It's not me.
Dude,
it's not. You.
Why do you have to live in denial like that?
It's not me.
All right. There
My
you go.
Nose is itchy.
Yes, seriously. Rick, this says about...
I wanted you to ask him more words.
He's like 0 for 5. I mean, really. He misspelled monocle, which he didn't even think was a real word, by the way. That is a made-up word, Rick. He says, but like absolute finality. Bam! Rick, about your Portland song, don't forget to throw in Meth Labs, Homelessness, Mall 205, and the Clackamas Classy Town Center. Yes, well...
Ooh, and Lloyd Center.
And Lloyd Center.
Lloyd.
Yeah.
Totally Lloyd Center. Lloyd... Center. We know enough musicians. Here's the thing. We know enough musicians, and we know enough people who can sing. I'm making a list of this right now. Lloyd Center.
That could have been a commercial.
Simpsons. Beer. Strip clothes. Top 6, 7. Rain. Bridges. Bikes. That's 9 things right there. You figure, look, here's the thing. We figure you do, whatever. You do 1 stanza, chorus. 2nd stanza, chorus. Solo, chorus out. You're done. All you need to do is come up with 2 stanzas. So there you go. All right, and...
I think we could totally do that.
We could totally do it. We could do it, and it all...
Do you want to do it like We Are the World style?
Total line by, with Cindy Lauper. With Dan Aykroyd. We'll get Dan Aykroyd to stand there. We'll get
Lord.
Dan Aykroyd to stand there in his dark shades. Did you ever look at the list of people...
Yeah, Raul actually has that on vinyl.
That you look and you're like people that you had no idea were on We Are the World.
Ridiculous.
Like Dan Aykroyd, for example.
I can't believe Bob Dylan did it.
Was he... He's not on We Are the World.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I didn't know that. I haven't really watched the We Are the World, the USA for Africa video, forever. I mean, it's been forever since I've done that. So, we'll do it.
God, song stuck in my head all day.
Rose City. See, that's why we have to do another one. We have to do something to knock that one out of, So, all we need is an opening line. All we need is an opening line, and the rest flows from there. We can just daisy trade it. We'll figure out who's gonna sing, whatever, at some later point. We'll daisy chain it, and we'll do one line, like a line today, a line tomorrow, or you know, whenever we do it, one line at a time. The people will pitch in.
What type of music are you thinking of?
I can totally hear it in my head, by the way, already, and I want to say it. I don't want to say because I'm getting way ahead of myself.
Are you going to do this? Is it going to be another one of your musical projects that you take over until anyone help?
Now, that's a mean thing to say.
I know you get visions in your head and you won't be able to let anybody else in.
No, the thing that I have learned in the past, I have this outside project I've been working on that I am, of course, because it's CBS, forbidden to talk about. Actually, I can talk about it. I just can't use the name or tell you where you'll be able to speak in code about it,
I have no idea what you're doing.
I'm doing this. I'm doing a musical side project with some of the Emerson Starship guys.
Can I guess?
What do you mean?
I mean, are you putting out a record?
Yes.
Awesome.
But it's not a station thing. It's not a show thing. It's totally a separate deal. And of course, CBS says that I can talk about it. I just can't. I swear to God, these are the rules. I can talk about it. I can't mention the title or the name, and I can't instruct anybody where they can buy it. That's it. I can talk about it all day long. I just can't tell you what it's called or where to get it.
Brad brings up a good point. We can't have Tanya Harding because she lives in Washington.
She's from Oregon, though, isn't she?
I don't know.
And she's in Oregon. I think Oregon claims her way more than Washington does.
I don't think anyone really wants
that. That's not true. Tanya is all... She is, man... She's Portland to her core. And she learned her trade at the Clackamas Town Center. The Clackamas Town Center is where Tanya Harding learned to do her deal. Chuck Palahniuk, Fight Club. We totally got to mention Chuck Palahniuk. Chuck Palahniuk. Chuck.
What about Saturday Market or the Shanghai Tunnels?
Saturday Market. No, I was going to say, the one thing I've learned, though, because it's Chris Morris, who is, you know, he's producing the record. The one thing I have learned what I don't know. The wisest man is he who knows what he does not know, Sarah, and I've learned that I know almost nothing about how to make good-sounding music. So, no, Chris is the guy who's been doing that. So, all right. It's 503-733-2970. So all we need is the first line. Here's the rule. Here's the rules, though. You don't have to use... I'll put this list on the website. You don't have to use the things on this list. Again, we Saturday Market, Lloyd Center, Tanya Harding, Simpsons Beer, Strip Clubs, Coffee, Rain, Bridges, Bikes, Chud? What a Chud? Oh, Chuck. Chuck. I wrote it down 10 seconds ago. You don't have to use those things, but that's a good head start for the things that sum up Portland. And I guess that's it. I mean, I guess that's really, just do that, and we just start with one line. Oh, and the whole thing, though, is we're aiming for Anthem. We are aiming for big Portland, Oregon anthem.
Ooh, I like it.
That's it.
Like Andrew WK-ish?
Yes.
But what kind of music, awesome, though? You kind of got sidetracked.
No, it's going to be just big and loud and dumb and great.
Okay.
It's going to be just big and freaking loud and just a big...
Like Kiss music loud, or like, are you talking like bluegrass? I mean, I guess that's what I'm looking
for. Bluegrass? Yes. Come on.
No, that's not my choice. I'm just saying I'm...
going to be able to zither.
That's what we're trying to get away from.
I'm looking for... I'm just asking you what you think, what type... I mean, if you had to put a parallel what you hear the song being, what type of music would it be?
I don't know. You listen to all of those great, you know who's really good at this are the British, and it's all with those soccer chants they do. Like Manchester United. Have you ever heard those British football chants, and they're just these big locker room stadium anthemic arenas.
We love going to the Timbers game because that's exactly what it's like. It's a bunch of chants and yelling and chaos, and that would totally be right.
Those are fantastic. So all we need is the first line, and so you don't have to use. I'll put this list on my website. You don't have to use this list, but it should be, you know, stuff that's Portland, and we're aiming for big, big, dumb, loud, fantastic, glorious rock and roll Portland anthem. Scotty's just stopped screening calls now. The calls are just coming in. He's just stopped screening them at all. Let me see here. Let's just take these. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello, this is Gary.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Gary. Help you?
I think Storm needs to sing this song.
Storm, yes. I mean, the list of musicians we know. The number of musicians and bands and people who sing and play and whatever, I mean, we got like 100. We could totally do our own We Are the World type thing here.
Definitely.
I mean, it could absolutely be that. So,
also, right. You need to mention strip clubs.
Strip clubs. Now, we've got strip clubs on the list. I think that was the first thing, actually. I think that was the very first thing. I think Dennis was like, strip clubs! That was the very first thing.
Hey,
very
hey,
first.
Hey, hey, hey.
There's something that rhymes with Rose City that you could use in the words, too.
Yes. All right. I think I've cracked your code, sir. End of call. All right.
Should we break?
We'll do one more. Hi, Shannon. You're on the Rick Emerson. We may have to actually start the lyrics of this tomorrow.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Shannon. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's nice to meet you guys at the party. It was
pretty cool. Thank you.
I was going to tell you, put Packy on that list.
Packy?
The
elephant. Packy.
Packy.
Excellent. All right, Packy. I think Scotty's antiperspirant's making me sick. I'm actually feeling a little nauseous.
Well, there's no circulation
right.
in here.
Shannon. It's true. All right, 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. I swear to God. When we heed a certain genius. See, picture this, but really with like really loud guitars. It's really loud guitars and then Storm and a cast of idiots all like screaming something cool about Portland at the top of their lungs. That's going to be the best thing ever. And the Rick Emmerich, and I am really, and I do this jokingly sometimes, but seriously now.
We've got to make a video to go with it, Rick. We've got to make a YouTube video.
Fantastic. I like the way you think. I like what we're saying, Sarah Dillon, and I swear to God, I am planting our flag on this right now. This, I'm calling this one. You all are witnesses.
And you jerks who sometimes steal our ideas, don't.
I swear to God.
There will be blood.
That's it.
Skippy's writing it right now.
Billy Joel.
That was Dennis Pittenbrenner who said that. Back after this, the Rick Emerson Show.
Smoky voice. She did the Betty Davis eyes. She sang
the Betty Davis eyes.
Karen, Cameron, Karen, something.
He's got Betty Davis eyes. Who sang Betty Davis? Kim Carnes.
Kim Carnes, thank you. I knew it was something like that.
What's that? Betty Davis? Not that song. Ray Charles. Can spot that.
Oh my God, and we've totally been to Super Digital, and they have a big room just like this. And we could film it in there.
Look at you, ka-ching.
That would be hilarious.
We are broadcasting from the Super Digital Studios deep within inside the CBS Broadcasting
Company. Are you please going to get the money sound?
Ka-ching. I think I had the ka-ching sound somewhere. Hold on, let me look. And then I can't. This isn't going to work, then. All right. Rick, you have to for the video, you have to have a steady cam shot of Storm walking across the... I like how we cast Storm in the song without even asking
I know,
her.
She's probably out of town.
I don't even think she's in the country. I think she's in Canada. Well, so much the easier to tell her. Storm, while you were gone, we've decided some things for you. All right. It's 503-733-2970. Let's see. I have no idea who most of these people are singing right now. I'm looking at the calls. Do I have time to... Scotty, should I be taking, Rick? Rick Emerson Show version of We Are the World. Can I be Al Jarreau? Genius.
It's mostly Bruce Springsteen and Stevie Wonder.
Yeah, this was the moment when Bruce Springsteen really risked looking like a bad parody of himself. Because he looks like he's constipated.
Oh, Bette Midler. I love her.
I love Bette Midler. Hi, Robert. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick.
What's up?
Yeah, love the show. Long time listener.
Thank you, sir.
Awesome. Hey, I think Scotty J wrote that Portland song because I swear I heard bagpipes in it.
No, it is a truly terrible. It is a truly terrible song. No, it's true. No, I'm with you. Thank you, sir.
All right,
thank you. Let's see. John, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Doesn't matter how it begins. Doesn't matter what's in the middle. You got to end it with, isn't that right, donkey?
Man, I don't know that this should not be a Rick Emerson Show song. This should not be a song about the Rick Emerson.
There's got to be Rick Emerson flowing throughout the song here,
so to speak.
Nothing is Portland like Rick Emerson.
Well, I appreciate that.
Maybe I'm saying the donkey thing is sort of show specific. This should be for, you know what it is? This is the Rick Emerson Show and audience's gift to all the peoples of Portland. I'm being very clear. This will be a group effort. This is not just us. This is the Rick Emerson Show and audience.
If it's a gift to Southeast Portland, it should come with like an 8 ounce of crack or something. Huh?
Thank you.
Just saying.
Thank you. All right, there you go. Chad, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick. How we doing?
What's up?
Hey, I think I got the first line to the song.
Now, this is a bold statement because we're only in like 90 seconds left on the show. So you believe, because we can do this, because it takes a while to construct lyrics. So we should, we'll do it one line at a time, maybe one line per day. Kind of like how we do listener party name suggestions. So it all comes down to the opening line and the hook. So what is your idea for the opening line of the to-be-written Portland anthem?
Well, I think we have to go with the strippers, and I don't know how long you want the lines, but here it goes. Well, we got more strippers than you. Thank you.
All right, genius, and you're out. Thank you.
Peace.
Out on high note. Strippers than you. Hey, Dennis, you didn't get to talk about anything today.
It's okay.
Would you like to set fire to something in the studio? You've got 30 seconds.
No, I did bring the big Dext official directory of Portland for you to hit me with, since that's what you asked for on Monday.
There's no way to explain what that statement means. I like it when Dennis hits me. Rick Emerson Show producer Dennis Pitzenbarger, listen to the car show 9 to 11. Dennis,
I do have to say thank you to your listeners, because a lot of them showed up at our get-together Saturday. So thank you to the Rick Emerson audience.
We'll talk a little bit more tomorrow.
Okay.
Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day by the lovely talented Sarah Stone for AM970 South State Radio. The news from Tim Riley, executive producer. God damn it, I did it again. Dave Zinn, like us, blah, blah, blah. We'll talk more about the Portland song tomorrow. And so I've mangled this entire ending. Help the retarded. I am one of them.
I barely knew her.
Damn it.